But light like a feather, and way across the horizon, deep in the hills, thunder is coming, echoing valley. An elven king, gentle, his master moves in robes of wind. And the poet on your breath, sweeter than peaches, bitter as grandfather time, may slip past you in a rhythm and shadow, but is received between the lines. Liddy, 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 hey, ah, ho, ka, hey. Liddy, 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 yeah. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. Ooh, ring them bells, child. No place like home, no place like home, and there's no place like home. Ring them bells for life, there's no place like home.
Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. This is Janaea, and we're not online presently. Hopefully we will be soon. If anyone knows where we can put our transmitter, it would be greatly appreciated, but we are streaming online. For those of you listening, welcome. And I'll be with you from either 2 to 5 or 2 to 4 this afternoon, I'm not sure. But I'm real excited about my first guest. Her name is Lena St. Michael, and she had written an article in, I believe it was June, in the Network magazine, Your Guide to Inspiration and Well-Being, about the Gulf oil disaster. And as you know, I've done a number of shows on how it's impacted me and how distraught I've been feeling about the pollution and just the disaster and the neglect of the launch of BP. And she grew up on the Gulf of Mexico and was able to contain her pain. I mean, she expressed her anger and her sadness over the disaster, and yet, in a beautiful way, was able to work through that. And I would love to hear, let you listen to what she has to share with us. And Lena, let me say a little bit about her first. She's an interfaith minister at Stanford Hospital, and she also teaches classical Ashtanga yoga throughout the East San Francisco Bay Area and community classes through the town of Danville, and also teaches private sessions. And she facilitates special wellness programs for corporations. And she's also a yoga coach to teens in the five-time Contra Costa County championship. I'm not sure what that is. But anyway, I want to welcome her on. Lena, are you with us?
I am.
Welcome.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
I feel really grateful to share. And thank you for the lovely introduction. And I want to just tweak a couple things. First,
sure.
I have not necessarily contained my pain.
Yeah. Well, you have a way of holding it,
and
I guess
I was formerly
a
chaplain at Stanford University Hospital, where through that teaching and being a chaplain in the North ICU, where there are heart and lung transplants, and also chaplain for the cardiac care unit, I had to develop a toolbox, mm-hmm. as I think probably everybody does. And the only other tweaking I want to do is, because it just happened over the weekend, that one of our swim teams is now the sixth-time Contra Costa County champ, and our Sharks yoga team that I particularly coached, one of their women is now she's on the Olympic team, and they're considered the ninth ninth best team in the United States. So
wow.
I'm very blessed to work with them.
Very exciting. Very exciting indeed.
Yeah, yoga's everywhere today.
It is. And you bring so much. I wish you lived closer and I could take a class with you, because this article really struck me. It was called The Gulf Crisis. You are the Devi you've been looking for, or 11 yogic keys to facilitate Gulf healing. And I just want to start by letting everyone know that you grew up in the Gulf of Mexico. And how were you impacted initially when you heard about the disaster and it kept exploding and the number of gallons that were leaking was brought to light?
We're breaking up a little. Am I clear on that end?
Yes, you are.
Okay, good.
This is your landline.
You know, within the first 4 days, you know, when you listen to the radio and TV, things will slip out.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing the math, and I feel that even at that time, Obama didn't get, and most people did not get it. We were using the wrong terms. We were saying spill. Spill is like I spilled milk on the counter.
Yeah.
This is this gusher. And just the numbers that I could, you know, easily multiply just horrified me.
Yeah.
And I had gone to a course at Mount Madonna, and I was staying for several days. And you asked me how it affected me initially.
Yes.
I woke up in the middle of the night when I realized how devastating this was going to be.
Mm.
And the next morning, it was like I had broken my hand. It was my left hand, you know, that mother side. I mean, out of the blue, maybe the blue deep blue sea, and I could not use my hand.
Wow.
And fortunately, I'm also a Reiki master, we know through all our work and yoga that the mind-body connection, and as it unraveled, I realized that I was clenching all this anger, and it literally felt like I broke my hand.
Mm. Wow.
And as I realized that and had some compassion, let myself cry, mm-hmm. I was gentle all day with that hand. By the next day or so, it actually completely dissipated. But that was my initial reaction. The next physical reaction, and I started journaling actually a few days after that, but mm-hmm. I got a very bad cold, Mata Amritanandamayi, hugging mm-hmm. the saint, you know,
yes,
wonderful
emanation
of Divine Mother, was visiting in San Ramon, and I am a devotee. I live very close to the center, and one night when I was sitting near her meditating, I saw all these very horrific visions, and I knew that I was being shown something, and right after that, within probably 48 hours, I got this bad cold, and the next thing, totally lost my voice. And if there's one thing, people who know me, if they're listening, that I don't do is lose my voice.
That would be a tragedy indeed.
You know what I'm saying?
And
I looked up my little Louise Hay book. You probably know
Yes.
And she said, anger so great it's unspeakable. And I went, whoa.
Yeah.
And then it turned into whooping cough. I actually got the whooping cough, and I was in really top physical condition. And it was just amazing to see how that sorrow was affecting me. And so it has been work. The article came from me journaling my toolbox and realizing that I had to work my toolbox and be very compassionate and take very, very good care of myself and step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was asked to write the article after telling one of the editors that at retreat how I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
She encouraged me to write the article, and that this is a time to work our tools, our practices that we've, I know in Santa Cruz, that we've been doing for a long time, and that we really are the ones that we've been waiting for. And if I'm knocked down to this point, I'm on the upswing now, but how about everyone else who doesn't know?
It
who doesn't know
soil.
That there are tools available, who doesn't know why all of a sudden they want to, run into a car that, the driver ticks them off.
And that's what was so beautiful about your articles. You had outlined 11 ways that we ourselves as individuals can start to resolve the crisis. And you said, which is very true, we must offer our time and consciousness daily to create an environment of stillness that yields great creative breakthroughs. Not easy. And then you write about the original thought. It doesn't come from suffering. It is a direct transmission of wisdom and truth. And then you write that you need to be in that place of stillness to hear that, so we can even know what to do in the situation and help others that are very upset and disturbed by it. Your message was beautiful. And for you to come up with that, you grew up there. Can you say a little bit about your family and how closely tied they were to the Gulf of Mexico, tourism
how
as well
closely
as fishing?
Tied.
Your family roots are down there. I was amazed. I thought, boy, I would have been immobilized. I really find what you did
It was shocking to me to realize. I assisted a lot with the tsunami work, and also Katrina with the Red Cross. And what was horrifying to me was that this was my disaster.
Yeah.
This was happening now to my family. Now, that I have
your
about 120 to 150 relatives. Most of all are in the Tampa Bay area. They are one of the premier many multi-generation, more recreational and sport fishing families. Mm-hmm. They've won cars, boats, motors, trailers, more probably big prizes than any other family in the whole area. And they're very much active with conservation activities there. So they take some responsibility, you know, for their sports fishing. I'm not going to say I'm totally excited about it, but this is it. And they
sure.
know. I never had frozen fish till I lived in California.
Mm.
I lived in the Bay Area for about 30 years.
That was
so
the Tampa
Bay
area. So my
uncles have a bait and tackle shop that's kind of the biggest and well-known. One of my cousins writes the fishing report for the St. Pete Times.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they took a picture of me once, and I'm actually looking at it now. when we went out fishing, there was this photographer from the St. Petersburg Times, and he took a picture of me holding this mango snapper, and I'm laughing, probably had a few beers that day. And for a year or two, every time the mango snapper were running, they put my picture in the paper, even though I was living in California. So I became the poster child for a fish. But my family has... Every one of my uncles, my cousins, they know the habitat of every fish. They know when it, what it eats. They know what eats it. They are, they're tied to the Gulf.
Very
I lived
intimately.
On the Gulf. I worked even on an ocean-going tugboat and passed all those oil rigs at night.
Oh.
And I also lived through red tide. When I did a report in, eighth grade, Gymnodinium breve is the Latin name for the red tide, when there would be massive fish kills because of the combination of now what I see is probably oil that had dispersed and certain temperature and water conditions. And we have a terrible situation there now.
Yeah.
My family, pretty much, God love them, they're still kind of in denial because they think from the maps that maybe it won't go to Tampa Bay, but we all know that dispersed does not mean gone. And if you put a capful of ammonia or dish detergent in a big aquarium, it will kill all the fish.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take much to know that.
And it's deep underwater.
And I remembered when I was a child and we always had aquariums. And the when we were getting fish and putting them into the aquarium, we would fill the aquarium with the tap water, but we'd always let it sit overnight so the little bit of whatever chlorine or fluoride, whatever chemicals, would evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
So, the fish are that delicate. What do we do? And blaming and shaming people and jumping up and down, saying, people are, are awful and terrible, even though it may be true, but it's not helpful.
No, not at all.
It's not helpful because we need miracles now.
Yeah.
And the only way to get miracles is that there has to be some stillness. There has to be positive thought.
Mm-hmm.
So we literally have to send positive thoughts to everyone. And we also know through the messages in water, emotos, messages in water, the experiments. Are you familiar with that?
I certainly am, in sending positive
thoughts. I'm sure you are. Masaru Emoto.
And a sense of love, absolutely.
I mean, we know that we have to send good thoughts to water.
And water transmutes for us. It alchemicalizes our thoughts and is very healing as we heal the water. It works in that way. It's a conduit of energy.
Exactly. And we're 75% water.
Mm-hmm.
Earth, 75% water. And
so
we have to work diligently on our mind. We haven't been given all the gifts of these amazing spiritual tools that are just out on the on the bookshelves, right?
Right.
For nothing.
And Lena, I also see it as an opportunity to exercise the spiritual muscles. Instead of just knowing about them, or when you're, it's late at night and it's quiet, basically, energetically in your neighborhood, you can sit quietly and meditate more easily. But in the middle of this torment and this excruciating pain and awareness of what's just happened, you're forced to exercise that muscle of stillness within. What's going to bring you there? And this
That's
is
right.
huge.
And maybe it's chanting a phrase over and over. Maybe it's keeping a picture in front of you. Or maybe if you're triggered, as I have also done many years of healing from violence, then we may be triggered again, that sense of powerlessness, of helplessness.
Oh.
And maybe we just need to call a friend, or maybe we need to get some help and go, you know what? I think it's time that I really did some serious work, and compassionately, of course, to heal this and take myself to another level. It's really much required right now.
Yes, and you write about the importance of releasing that mental and physical pressure that's been building up as a result of this, and how responsible it is to seek help in doing that.
Absolutely.
One of your 11 recommendations was shame and blame. It was one of your 11 recommendations. You had them outlined very neatly in the article. It's beautiful. I was reading it late at night. I was working. I thought, oh, this is exactly what I need to hear. Thank you, whoever you are. And then I called you. And you write that the more one... I'm sorry?
Well, we're twinking out a little, so I don't mean to talk over you, but sometimes just know that it's blanking out a little
sure.
on my side. It's so delicious to get into anger and blame and a spiritual ego, which is kind of a contradiction in terms. But
I
that
it well, unfortunately.
But this calls for us to call out the big guns of compassion. And from the Center for World Networking, Teresa Stolaroff channeled through Sri Yukteswar, and
yes.
It was at a retreat where he just laid, and I think Babaji as well, just laid it out. Stop complaining. Stop it. Just so that was just coming from them. Just stop it, because it is not helpful. And it gets in the way of the creativity, and it's, of course, actually polluting.
It actually feeds the sense of hopelessness and despondency.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
It really
does. There are no other options.
It means that we're a victim, which is
yes.
absolutely not true.
No. It isn't true. And we can move forward.
And
you're not in denial about what you're feeling. You're working with it. You're aware of it. And then you're going from there. And it, for me, it's a daily process. And I still get stuck, but...
Well, it may be several times a day, but being aware, and I have to... I want to keep in touch with what's happening. At the same time, I can't get buried in it too much if it starts me on that road of feeling hopeless
mm-hmm.
and victim. It's better for me to turn it off and, chant a mantra or positive thought or take a bubble bath or, get exercise, whatever. And again, I'm not saying that it is easy at all. It may be several times a day that we get these waves.
Yeah, waves, yes.
Open the refrigerator and take out a piece of fish, and all of a sudden you're going,
I know.
My gosh, we'll never eat fish again.
Sure, the memories that are triggered and the past pains and sadnesses as well. And it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, it can be, and maybe something that will help your viewers by bringing it up in this way is that it is scary and awful, but it is now.
Whoops. I'm losing you. Are you there?
I am here.
There. You're back. I don't know what happened there.
Well, so what, and what I said was, so it is to your listeners to know that it is natural and it is normal and you are not alone. And as Kubler-Ross talks about in the stages of grief, they don't happen in just one chunk. Like, okay, there was my day or week or month of anger, and now I'm into sadness, and now I'm into recovery. It can be. It's your own personal journey and personal mm-hmm. roller coaster. And of course, as Baba Hari Das says, we grow better. We grow faster in pain.
And that's the truth.
Because we have to.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, of course, the Gulf of Mexico looks pale, even, in comparison to what's happening in Pakistan.
I know it. And people, that is just now getting out, the severity of it.
Mm-hmm. They said that Here we go. If the Gulf didn't throw you, here you go. They said that a landmass the size of Florida, was flooded because they had 10 times the annual rainfall. 10 times the annual rainfall, and they're like monsoon people there, right? In 4 days.
Mm, mm.
In 4 days, 10 times the annual
it's
rainfall.
It's unfathomable.
And then we have the fires, and we have some, you know, biblical stuff going on.
The immense suffering throughout the planet.
Yeah.
It's not...
And go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was just saying that it's not personal.
Well,
it's happening
globally. Is great suffering, and I tell my students, today I was teaching at the country club, that this is your day to hold the light.
Mm-hmm.
The day, you know, you have shelter and you have clothes and
yeah.
you have time, and we have these practices,
mm-hmm.
And it's a nice, beautiful, calm day. And this is
we're very fortunate.
Our day. If we're listening, this is our day to hold the light
yeah.
for someone else.
Exactly, we can. We literally have that luxury right now and that opportunity. And I also like what you wrote about not being in a drama zone. You called it no drama zone. Refuse to get sucked into the darkness or crazy making. Only watch the news to the extent that you can raise your vibration to compassion, peace, and divine possibilities. Yet don't run away. Pray for life in transition. Many are passing over to
many.
It's, the habit.
Sorry, it cut out. What did you say?
What did you say about Amma?
Well, Amma, after the tsunami struck her ashram in southern India, and of course they were 24/7. Helping. And she said over and over, and from the beginning, the many who have died, they're okay. We must take care of the people who are living. And she literally sent people out into the sticks, you know, out into the what we would call the boonies, to count the people in the town who were remaining. And so while we do grieve them, and it can trigger our own places of grief, which a beautiful person said that grief is really the heart ripping open to be larger.
Yeah, well said.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is beautiful. It's the flip side of that pain, the compassion that is opened up to the world.
I mean, I don't wish that pain in a sense on anybody.
But there is
painful.
A flip side to it. Ow, excruciating.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
It certainly is. But you do, there is a sense of, for lack of a word, better word, poignancy to it. And a sense of realness. It's raw. And you're that much more connected with all that is alive still. And that has gone over. The grief can just be overwhelming. But it connects you with so much more of life. You're not stuck in distractions and whatever it is that's preventing you from being present. It opens up the pain to such a greater extent. It's not a shallow recognition. It's right there.
Well put.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. And maybe if we can live a little more there,
yeah,
and not complacent, and realize the incredible, incredible gift we have today, you know, and let, when the heart opens, it opens everywhere, and realizing the precious resources, and maybe realizing that we want more to life than a job that's going to pay for something called health care or Social Security,
yeah,
maybe we have the answers. In fact, I know we have the answers somewhere,
yeah,
somehow, to finding some balance.
And things are changing so rapidly that it's really good practice to start letting go of some of these false senses of security that surround us. You're absolutely right, because our help does depend on ourselves, ultimately.
Yep. I'm amazed when I mean, God love Whole Foods markets, but I see them taking these, and the parents fully invested, and the teachers fully invested in having kids go to their store. It's not just Whole Foods, so, because I've actually had confrontation with some teachers and parents, and they have the kids go to the meat department to talk about where meat comes from, and go to the bakery department. And
yeah,
to me, that represents some bit of out of touch.
Oh, for sure. Through no fault of our own, we're born into these societies where we shop for everything that we eat, and sustainable gardening is coming back. The old Victory Gardens from World War II. And as we eat that,
yes,
as we eat more healthfully, we do, and you recommend also getting and staying strong, because you can't serve from an energy deficit. I'm quoting what you're writing here, and how true that is, and so much of it involves how we take care of ourselves, which is dietary.
Well, absolutely,
well.
And that was a realization that I have had over the last couple months, because I was not only teaching my regular, sometimes like 9-10 yoga classes a week, doing my own practice, biking or getting some kind of cardio 3 hours at least a week. I was eating healthy. I was feeling strong. I was looking good. And boom, the golf thing just, you know, still knocked me down. I never missed any of my classes. But
that's
had
amazing.
I known I had whooping cough, I would have stayed away. I'll just add that caveat.
Oh, I know.
But I had that strength somehow to keep doing my responsibilities, and I got over it very quickly. But I thought, my gosh, all my strength, we just never know when we just might need every single bit of that strength. And years ago, I kept wanting to serve. I was doing spiritual work in LA, and I didn't have financial resources. My immune system was shot, and I wanted to give, but I didn't have anything to give with.
And this was your home, your sanctuary, that was literally destroyed, or had the near about to be destroyed before your very eyes, and you weren't getting the truth in the media of the severity of it, so I can see how that would just rip your heart out.
Oh, and the golf, back
yes,
to the golf.
Yes, back to the golf. I keep going back there. This was your home. I can't imagine that from Cape Cod. I can't imagine that happening on Cape Cod. The fury and the rage and the grief over that loss.
Or Monterey Bay.
I know it. Ours right here.
Or Monterey Bay, and all water is connected.
That Black Death, yeah.
Everything is connected. This is, Amma said also 3 or so years ago that we need to be planting like we have a gun to our head. Mm. And, of course, this was before this year happened. Mm-hmm. And we do have to get back to the earth. We've got to get back to the water. We think we're in living this luxury, but really we're at the survival level needing clean air, clean water, and good food. And I believe, and I think part of my mission is to keep in that there is always possibility.
Me too, yeah.
And I don't think that's an airy-fairy thing.
No, it's not.
As you're reading,
it's a survival
the things
issue
that
right
I
now.
Wrote.
Yeah, not at all. You describe it very well.
These truths, we have to create it, and it takes work. And we just never know who might have the solution. Recently, a wise teacher said, if you think you might have a good idea, don't just sit on it. You must act, or you will regret it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're doing it for all of us. And you mentioned that, too, our interconnection, which I totally understand you. Right. Again, I keep going back to what you wrote. It's not BP's disaster or Obama's Katrina. This is our disaster. A USA and planetary disaster of epic proportions. It is not environmental or economic. Our food chain is in peril. This is not just an oil spill. We have unleashed the forces of Mother Nature by not respecting her. And you write about the difference between dominion, ownership, and control, and really being with the land. I call the mother, the respect for her. She provides us our source of food, our nurturance, vegetables, fruit, and to disrespect her in this manner is outrageous. And we're all responsible for that in our transportation habits, using so much gas. It's time we really demand alternative forms of transportation, and that's just one way. But you touched upon so much that I feel very strongly about in your article.
Well, thank you. I'm actually kind of amazed looking back at it myself.
Oh, I have it right in front of me.
But that's, that's just maybe one little piece or a very tiny, tiny, tiny example of just following through. And I shared some feelings. The person said, why don't you write them down, send them to us. And so if this is something that's helpful, and that there was a place where I sat down and the article kind of wrote itself. It really didn't have a lot of it seemed like thought to it at the time. But when we can find some of that inertia, and it is passion.
Yes.
Anger sometimes I think is confused just with strong energy, and often we're overwhelmed with the strong energy of convictions, and it's a strong energy that maybe some of our friends and family aren't used to us seeing, or we're used to playing small, and this just kind of, it just poured out, and it was just, you know, what I had to do, and I'm grateful. It's not all my original wisdom, for sure. But I think, and what I hope that everyone will do who hears this, is say, what is my role in this? How can I maybe just sit and meditate 5 minutes a day if I don't now do it? Mm-hmm. Maybe that yoga practice I said I wanted to do and I've been putting off, I think I'm going to do it. Maybe I will get strong. Maybe I will follow through on an idea I have, even though everyone else around me thinks it's crazy.
And you're working
because
diligently.
Because I think we have to, the old is gone. It's not going.
It's gone.
It's not on its last gasp. It went.
It is. And there, it's opportunities for many breakthroughs at this point, too. And we need the breakthroughs in science and technology. As you say, we need those miracles. And to live our highest purpose now, it's necessary.
It is. And often that purpose is just is starting with what quality do we resonate with, whether it's love or compassion or joy or beauty, whatever that we can keep in our focus, that quality that we makes us feel like home. And this is from a teaching of Sri Yukteswar through Teresa. He helped us to get in touch with what word or phrase, quality that makes everything feel all right. And that's usually that quality that we offer the world. And when we keep focused on that, not just our list of what do we need to do today, tomorrow, like I've got my list because my mom's coming from Florida today, but the higher list of, I want beauty today. I want joy. I want peace.
That's beautiful.
If we can just focus on those things, that leads us to the right action. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. It's being true to thyself. You know, it really is being who we are in our hearts. And you write about the importance of the questioning within our breath. As a yoga instructor, can you say a little bit about that? The answer to every question is in the breath.
Yes.
Please.
Did I write that?
You did
indeed.
I'm looking at it.
Huh?
I know you wrote that.
Oh, did I write that?
You did. It's beautiful. Well, it says so much. If you could just elaborate.
That was something that was said, that Yukteswar said a long time ago, that we could think of the breath as like the universal encyclopedia. In the yogic philosophy, we would be looking at the place of discriminative wisdom, where we're not necessarily guided by our senses, but we're doing that inner listening, and the inner listening comes through the breath to bring forth a beautiful teaching of Amas, and all the teachers. Have said it in one way or another, that when we are at the greatest part of our inhalation, we are, Amma says, our self is closest to the physical. That's cool, isn't it? Not
it
our breath is closest
is.
To ourself, but our breath, our life force energy,
that's always
is
a different emphasis.
The self is closest to the dense physical realm. When we exhale, at the end of the exhale, that cessation before the inhale, where is our self? It's in the universal.
It's with the breath. It connects us
right,
to the
that
air.
That wave of the breath.
The atmosphere, the air that we're so much a part of, that we are.
That's right. That a way I like to explain the prana or chi, the life force energy, is that just like we have a conduit of wire, and we turn the electricity on, and the electrical energy, invisible energy, right, is carried on the wire. So on the breath, the air, the life force energy is carried on the air.
Beautiful description.
And so,
analogy.
And just to carry this further, in the biblical terms, they talk about the choice between the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. By the way, it's not the tree of good and evil. It's the knowledge of
great
good
distinction.
And evil. Or the tree of life. And the tree of life, to me, always seems to be, that's that discriminative wisdom.
Lena.
That's the intuition. That's that answer that is in the breath.
perfect. There's someone at the door, my next guest, so one moment. Maybe you could just elaborate a bit more on that, and I'll be right back. One moment. There's someone at my door here
okay,
in the little
everybody,
basement
I'll keep
studio.
Talking while she answers the door. I think that we're at a magnificent time right now.
Hi, I just returned.
I don't know if it's going to get more comfortable for anyone. But I do think that, especially in this area, the Santa Cruz and San Francisco Bay Area, that we have a real opportunity to take the spiritual principles for a spin. And I want to just add to that the importance of having teachers, guides, masters, whether it's that symbol of Hanuman or Ganesha for you, if it is Jesus or Mary or Buddha, or if you can find the best living teacher in your philosophy that you resonate with, in your religion. Mm-hmm. Of course, Santa Cruz is filled with great teachers pretty much on every corner. You know, go down to Gateway's books even. Go to Mount Madonna. Go to mm-hmm. Land of Medicine Buddha. PCC, Pacific Cultural Center. Go to the channelings at Center for World Networking, and obviously, as I can tell, listen to Cindy.
I don't know about that.
But do find the best masters
mm-hmm.
who have the purest heart mm-hmm. that you can find. Oh, I have to mention Inner Light. I actually helped
yes.
to found their prayer ministry there. In fact, it was Deborah Johnson who brought me up here to Santa Cruz.
Oh.
Yeah.
We have a lot of resources here. We're extremely fortunate.
mm-hmm. But find teachers so that you're not alone, and even if it's a psychologist, find those people in your life who absolutely know the truth and can help guide you there.
And how important it is in that guidance to stay in your vision so that you are part of the answer or the solution.
And absolutely. And the teacher will help bring you into, remind you of your vision, mirror your true self, your true vibration back to you so you remember.
Exactly.
So you remember, and so you will, and I mean, my teachers just constantly say, okay, what's your toolbox? And some of those are on those pages there of that article.
And in that process, it becomes extremely obvious how addicted we are to, and you write about this too, convenience and comfort. And that is not part of your vision. I mean, the hurdles that we have to overcome to hold that vision and to see it daily, step by step. You know, you could take a bus, you could walk somewhere. They're simple. And opening up your heart to someone that's in distress somewhere that you originally didn't care about, whatever the reason is, they're all steps to that vision. Planting a little garden. Everything we do makes a huge difference. It may look like something very small, it's not important, but it is. It really is, and you write about that too. Observe your personal addiction to comfort and convenience or instant gratification and your fears of change and dissolving them. These are very profound. Each step looks so simple and easy. They're not. We're retraining our habits. I mean, you so succinctly write about a whole way of being from your experience.
Mm-hmm. We are, and it can be fun.
It can.
I in our area, you can, and especially at my apartment complex, most all of my furniture I've found it sitting next to the dumpster, or a neighbor's moved out and given it to me. And I mean, if you look at my apartment, somebody said the word shabby chic about another friend. My apartment is not shabby chic. It's pretty doggone elegant. And my mom
shabby
always
chic,
said,
I love that.
Don't tell people. You don't have to tell people that, you know, you were given this and given that. And I said, you know, abundance. One way of abundance is you can take your credit card into Nordstrom or wherever and buy what you want. But when you can manifest exactly what you want and it shows up, you know, outside your dumpster or
gosh,
your neighbor has it, to me that's real abundance. And I think it's fun.
Wow.
I mean, there's so much that...
Oh, it is.
And then there's... And my house is so full right now. I'm going to ask my mom to, you know, help me give stuff away because we just accumulate things.
Yeah.
We just accumulate things. And I'm a comfort junkie. I have every type of comfortable chair in the world in my house. And many people would think I live austerely.
When I say comfort, I meant... there's an insatiability to comfort, like having our air conditioning on constantly. If it's not 75 degrees exactly, if it goes above 75, the air conditioning goes on. That kind of comfort and not willing to walk to the local grocery store. You know, just a little. I mean, I'm not saying all comfort.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. We get used to a narrow range of emotion. We get used to a narrow range of, like you say, temperature. Oh my gosh, I have some students freaking out if it is 72, not 74.
I know.
You know, in the classroom, we get used to this narrow band of what we live in, and then we have to prop ourselves up with so many things. Yeah, I think it'd be hard. Can you imagine living one day totally sustainably?
No. I'd love to.
I'm not sure I can. It takes
effort.
A lot.
It does.
But I think as you
proactive.
Said, like, even when now, okay, last year it was convenient for me to my cats all of a sudden got this outbreak of fleas, and I went searching everywhere, and I bought the stuff to put on their neck. Well, I have two cats, and they actually kind of started to lick the stuff off, and I realized they were getting sick. So I started researching herbal ways to control the fleas, to dissuade them, and I found that actually half the things in my garden or that I could grow on my patio would repel the fleas. And so, like you just said, we can do many things if we just maybe take one little project here and there and start finding more creative and natural and healthy and sustainable ways to live.
Absolutely. And one other thing, we have about five more minutes here, but the importance of not judging, it's something I sometimes get lost in, and how unhelpful it is. And then you stay sad, confused, and guilt-ridden. And you are talking about your students and friends that work for Chevron and many of the other oil companies, and how sad they are over the situation, distressed as well. Obviously, no one wanted this to happen.
No.
I don't think.
No.
I sometimes wonder, though.
Well, since I live within a mile of Chevron's headquarters, down the street, 15-minute walk. And so some of my students work for oil companies, and I have a couple who are uber high up executives, okay,
mm-hmm.
who are my students. And so that had me do some work there. Sometimes
I bet it did.
I see them crawl into my class, and right after this happened, I just realized these are my students here. Yeah. They've come for support. They've come for help.
Yeah.
And they don't need me laying a guilt trip on them.
No.
And I realized how, of course, it's causing them to question everything they're doing. And we have, I'll make it quick, too, in the yogic philosophy, the sutras and the Samkhya philosophy talk about five kleshas. They're the, like, mental issues that we have to deal with that keep us from listening to our higher self. And that's egoism, ignorance. Attraction can hurt us, right?
Yeah.
Aversion, the judgment, and the fifth one I can't come up with at this second, but it'll come to me. But looking at those and just doing our best every day, we're just maybe ignorant at a certain level, or every variation that's on. But if you, as a person on the radio, me as a teacher, if we judge into us, we're not really living, you know, living our possibility. We're not really being helpful.
No.
And then we've got to forgive ourselves, because that way, in one of Sri Yukteswar's five major commandments is, I forgive easily, joyfully, and daily.
Oh, that's easy to remember,
that's a
too.
Tough one.
It is. It is.
That's a really tough
it
one.
It is. Oh, gosh. Well, Lena, we're going to have to...
Just plugging away. Just keep plugging away. And I want to mention that many years ago in a visioning, I had an awareness. And a visioning meaning we were sitting around trying to listen to our inner wisdom in a group. And this was in conjunction with Inner Light, starting Inner Light. And it came out, everybody... said, Lena, you should be on the radio. And I thought, oh my gosh, that would be
and here you are.
That would be amazing. And so I want to thank you, because I would love to share more, and it's nice that it's wonderful that you felt that there was something that valuable to share.
Oh, very
and
much
I
so.
And I really honor you for your courage and tenacity in stepping out on your vision.
Well,
I really
thank
do, because you're thank inspiring
you.
Me.
Well, you inspired me. I was very distressed about the situation in the Gulf, and I have family too in Alabama and Florida, and had just been visiting my sister in Alabama, and I came back just horrified, and had a few people on the radio talking about what they knew, and I'd like to have you on again and talk about what's going on down there with your family, and really basically those that are on the front line, and what's happening. And what they're doing about it, what we're not hearing necessarily in the media.
Well, I would love to.
Great.
So,
we will do that.
I know you have another guest, and
yes.
We can. I'd be honored if there's any way that I can support the listeners and support the
Great.
Show and do my part.
Well, I'm on every Thursday, usually from 2 to 5. So we can definitely arrange it. Thank you.
Blessings.
So much,
thank you.
Lena. Bye-bye.
Blessings to all. Namaste.
Namaste. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, that was Lena St. Michael, and she is from... I think it's the Tampa Bay and the Gulf of Mexico and Florida, and presently living in the Marin area. And she wrote a beautiful article on the Gulf crisis in the Network magazine. It's a pink magazine that's free in a lot of our newsstands. But I'm going to be putting on Robert Mirabel, The Dance, and then we're going to be speaking with a very favorite, one of my favorite guests and dear friend, Julia Lonergan. She has written book 3 on the haunting of Mission Santa Cruz. And we'll be back in about 3 minutes. But in the meantime, I have Robert Mirabel on. Let's see, the dance. I just came back from Sundance, so I'm still very much there, and this is the closest I can come to remembering it. Where is he? Where is Robert Mirabel? Our computer is rather slow, and I got this piece off of YouTube. Let's see if it comes on here. Otherwise, we can hear Warriors on the Way. Boy, is it slow. Maybe a lot of people are streaming today. Is that how it works? I have to figure out how I can tell how many folks are listening here. And transmitter, that's been
the Pueblo Victor. Elders have lived through many hardships.
And I'll be back with Julia.
They always have a twinkle in their eye when they talk about the dance. My grandma always says, now when your arms and your legs are strong, now is the time to experience and experiment with the dance. I visited many cultures, and I think it is a dance that keeps them alive and keeps them together. This is called the dance.
Afternoon, and you're still listening to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz, and I'm scheduling with you from 3 to 4, possibly 4 to 5, we're not sure yet, but with me right now is one of my favorite guests, Julia Lonergan. She's been on 3 or 4 times, and she's the author of The Haunting of Mission Santa Cruz, Mexico, 1708 to 1876, and this is Volume 3, subtitled The Haunted Temple, and we'll be learning about the importance of temples and the temples that have been in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and also Chaco Canyon, mm-hmm. and Sacred Geometry, and mm-hmm. she is actually celebrating or honoring Ramadan mm-hmm. For the month. Mm-hmm. And before I put her on, I just want to read a little bit about her. She holds a PhD in psychology from the University of California, Santa Cruz, RUCSC, and she studied at New Mexico State University. She is an expert in cognitive studies, including psycholinguistics, material, culture, history, and foreign language. Welcome again, Julia.
Thank you. Okay, that's so much fun.
It is fun. But I want to ask you a little bit about the significance of Volume 3, mm-hmm. The Haunted Temple, and how it relates to temples, Ramadan
uh-huh.
and sacred geometry, and then the crescent moon in the sanctuaries. Sorcery as
temples.
Well.
Uh-huh.
Where do we go from
here? Well, we have a Volume 3, which is, I believe now at this point that it's the last book. I hope so, because it's really been an overwhelming amount of information, and it's much too interesting to not document. So
that's for sure.
Yeah, and I hope eventually that I can say that it's the last book. But right now we're on book 3 over a year and 3 months time period or so. And there's just so much archaeology here in Santa Cruz. And I've learned to absolutely love the city.
Yes, and you just don't include Santa Cruz. You include the whole Bay Area as well as your homeland,
yes.
Las Cruces, New Mexico, and then Chihuahua. Into, and you spent time in the Netherlands, and you brought in more Spain. You're very varied and rich in your understanding
yeah.
of history and spirituality and science.
The border area. I did my postgraduate work. It was a Master of Philosophy at the University of Amsterdam. And that is really what kind of opened me up to where I was from. So I started to look very closely at the indigenous cultures that I lived on their land. So,
and that culture is
There's many in New Mexico. Yeah. There's 12 Pueblo Indians. In North Mexico, we have 12 extinct Indians completely. We have 4 remaining very small tribes between 7,000 and 200,000 in the mm-hmm. Copper Canyons. One of the major tribes in the Copper Canyon, which is the Tarahumara tribe, I began trying to apply some of what I was learning in the linguistics in the computer science department at New Mexico State. So we would build parsers, which kind of intermediate between bilingual news articles. We're trying to do translation. And then I would try to use this intermediary system to try to intermediate understanding between indigenous and endangered language. So I'm an expert in endangered language, and I'm a member of the Foundation for Endangered Language. It's a UK nonprofit, and conferences
all over
show. The world.
It certainly is.
So Santa Cruz was to me a new exploration because I come from the area of the Chaco Canyons, where, 3 hours from my house is sacred space. And we have just a marvelous access to the ruins in Casas Grandes, Chihuahua, where we also have the massive underground water systems that are the most sophisticated. And these are destroyed in the year 1200 or so. So it's long before the quote-unquote Spanish conquest and colonization, and they're really not telling us the truth. And we domesticated turkeys. Turkey lurkey cages everywhere in Casas Grandes. Casa Grande means big house. It means kiva. It means underground mm-hmm. ceremonial chamber. It means temple. And mm-hmm. it also means faro, pharaoh. Pharaoh's name in Spanish is Casa Grande, big house. In Egyptian, it's faro. And we have huge parallels in these cultures. So the feathered snake culture in North Africa, Egypt. We have the feathered snake culture in North Mexico, the pyramid cities.
There are those similarities again.
And then we have roads that relate these spaces
so
right up here to Holy Cross. And what is this?
The
this
church.
Is Santa Cruz. Holy Cross.
Here.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. So Book three was kind of me doing what I do where I'm from, but learning to adapt to a different archaeology, anthropology. It's not...
What do you mean a different?
It's more, well, the... What,
not a rock culture.
It's not rocks, yeah, it's basically.
It's seafaring.
Wood.
And wood, it's trees,
wood.
Yeah.
It's wood and trees. And we're from the desert, so Chihuahua is a huge desert. We're in 100-degree heat every day down there, and we live in adobe. So when I came out to Santa Cruz,
you did have an adaptation.
Definitely. And the book was when I terminated my doctorate program in the university. It was an exploration just in creativity to redo what I do in the past before I came and completed this very rigorous program in, you know, our founding fathers. Yeah, Francis Bacon, thank God for science, but it's kind of been usurped.
It has. Our history, our knowledge of history is somewhat distorted.
And so that's what the books are about, is
that's
the actual land grabs.
Oral tradition.
Yeah. The histories that we have are forgeries, and they're very dry, and humans are not very interested or engaged, but we know the landmarks. So if we start thinking about actually what happened here, which is, so book three is called The Haunted Temples, because, and we talked prior.
Can't wait
prior,
to read it. I just got it today.
Yeah, about the Moorish temples that are on the eastern side of the Santa Cruz Mountains. So you have to put in your heart that Santa Cruz is the northernmost point. Well, here we go to San Francisco, where the Camino Real, which means Road of the King or Royal Road, terminates. So the Royal Road that crosses the whole continental United States, that unified the center pyramid cities of Mexico to Northern California, are connected by a road that goes south from El Paso, Texas, into Mexico. It's more than 4,000 years old, and goes north from El Paso, Texas, up to where we are now, and that's called the Camino Real.
Yes.
And that the northern road is newer than the southern road. It's less traversed. Its dates and finds are around 2,000 years old, but it's still much older than 1797 when they say they found it, the road.
Yeah, I know. There's another distortion of history for you. So much older than we think.
Right, and we have to learn to think more flexibly. If we really know that the De Anza expeditions from the 1760s all the way to the 1820s, these expeditions just didn't happen once so that we could make a census data of one family. But there was many expeditions over many years by the Anzarans, which are controlling the Camino Real, and this is the Royal Guard under the Spanish government, all the way up until independence of Mexico in 1821.
Not acknowledging that allows for a simplification of the people that were here, and it makes an excuse to grab the land.
Yes, and to pretend there was no development here. So
exactly.
One of the main forgeries is
that, was here.
That we came to an empty space, so, oh my good, finders keepers, losers weepers. It was empty, so I found it. They didn't find it. They didn't find anything.
So what was here?
There have always been interconnections in our world at all times and in all ages. So the whole idea of the feathered serpent and the movement into the future, which the relationship, I know I'm trying to stay, the story is a web.
It's vast.
It's humongous, yeah.
But each web leads to another circle.
And these circles is itself the Mother Earth symbol. And that's a pattern of our migrations, of where we come from in the womb. It's a symbol of the earth itself and water piercing the earth, or our travels through water to the earth. The Hopi migrated in these great patterns. And then once they landed in the Americas, they came to the eagle god, Macaw, and said, can we settle? And he said, no, you have to migrate four times to the four corners, which is the basis of indigenous migration. So they're migratory people. So, and we understand this cross-culturally, that, you know, even the Hebrews followed the stars. This means that we had an understanding of sacred space, our space. What is that space? It's the Earth orbit in its stellar objects that accompany it around the sun. And these are patterns that over hundreds of thousands of years, cultures acquired information on.
Can you say a little bit about the information that was acquired?
Well, so what we have... how do you say, decoded or downcoded or represented in material culture is our understanding of what goes on in space, celestial objects.
So as above, so below.
Yeah, and those representations, we try to capture them in how we live. So this is what's happening too with Ramadan.
And what is the point of recapturing it?
It's everything, just like in it, like the indigenous cultures make a ritual. They're not the literate cultures that write and read and think you learn through reading. I mean, we're the ones that are kind of deceived, thinking we're going to learn through reading. Even practice tells
what,
us
folks?
Experience means our body has to be part of the learning process, mm-hmm. and not anything difficult like piano or dance. You cannot learn in a book.
In one sense, feeds in another. The sense of physicality feeds on our spirit. In our spirituality, we're much more alive.
Right. So here we have the relationship of the eagle. So when the Hopi mm-hmm. landed, the eagle, think of his feathers. You see, that's the crescent moon.
Oh.
The Indian, that's a Tu tribe. And that also stands for the
antlers.
That's
true in so many of the ceremonies.
It's
you
in
see
every
the crescent
ceremony.
Circle and the eagle.
And you will always find
one in the same.
What they usurped as paganism would be the ideal of the bull, which is also itself, his two horns is the crescent. So it plays itself out over and over and over. And so in Ramadan, what they're doing is they're kind of following when that pattern will appear again each year. Because the moon has 12 positions. And if you think about a quadrant, four quadrants in a plane. Mm-hmm. And in each of those quadrants, there's four positions for the moon to take. As it as it spins with the earth
and
around the sun.
And those four positions fall.
And those fall, they correspond with everything we encode as religion, understanding of our past, understanding of where we're going.
Can you give some examples of that?
So in the Mayan calendar, so pyramids are calendars, and the calendar is a pyramid. It's a way mm-hmm. to hold that pyramid in your hand and decode mm-hmm. information. So the Mayan calendar is... I just can talk so much about everything.
Sure,
it's hard to get.
I want
to
hear you talk
get so
a bit
stuck.
About the Mayan calendar, though. This is fascinating.
Well, Quetzalcoatl was deported. Well, he was run out of the pyramid temples in Mexico City in the year 999, and he ends up in the Mayan lowlands, and then Chichen Itza is built, and these are mimics of Chichen, which are pyramid temples in Mexico City under the feathered snake. So the feathered snake, again, is now we got to go back to Ramadan. What does he have? Why is he a feather and why is he a snake? So the tail of the serpent is one horn tribe. So many indigenous, we're one horn tribe, and that's the snake tribe.
Right.
It goes all the way back to Isis. Isis and Horus. Horus is the eagle. He's the falcon god, and Isis, his mother, is the snake tribe. Watch. Snake tribe, one horn, snake. Horus, falcon god, two feathers, or... Eagle, snake. They're just subcategories of categorizations of language and the way we understood. It exists even in the Torah, in the ancient Hebrew.
So many ancient traditions are saying the same thing.
And we don't let them say the same thing. So that's one reason why I wrote the book,
us.
Is to say, look again at Santa Cruz's history. It's Mexico. It was Mexico here. It's the northernmost point of a very ancient and sacred road. Mm-hmm. And this sacred road, I have to tell you, leads right to the Chaco Canyon. And the Chaco Canyon was built in the year 700 or earlier, but it became a high culture in the year 700. From the year 700 to the year 1325 or 1295, those canyons were in full force functioning. And they end right in the 1300s. What ends in the 1300s? Almost all the high culture of the Moors in Spain.
What do you think shattered?
They would deport. Because there's interrelationships at all times. What's happening in Spanish Europe under the southern Spanish is affecting their landed territories in Mexico. So we know that there were Spanish land grants in Mexico. But what we forget is that the Spanish are not all Catholic. The southern Spanish that held those land grants are Moors. And the eastern side of the Santa Cruz Mountains has the Moorish temples that have been destroyed and are a displaced home of tombstones. That's a curse on Santa Cruz. What do you mean? They messed up the sacred geometry that was done by the Franciscans that traveled on the De Anza expeditions and rebuilt. They did not build anything. None of
so
us build. We rebuild.
So when the Moorish culture was desecrated in Spain... It followed here shortly thereafter.
And then
this was
Mexico. Uh-huh. And it took them about 200 years to get us.
Catholic.
Right.
So it was slower. Important to negate and destroy the Moorish influence in those temples.
And look what we
do. And build something else.
the most sacred space in the world would be where man comes from, where our earliest templates and seals come from, the Indus River Valley. And that's Babylon. That's the land that we are throwing depleted uranium and we're murdering every single day. And Afghanistan.
What are we doing? Oh,
that's sacred.
Say a little bit about Afghanistan.
Well, I don't know a lot, but most human migration peaked through there. Either we came through there, we came from there, we traversed there, but artwork, if you want to look at artwork as your evidence of human, the oldest artwork comes from Turkey. It comes down from Afghanistan in that area of Turkey into the Middle East. And those temples built in Jerusalem have Turkish, and that it's that Eastern Orthodox religion. Mm-hmm. And it's all of religions are like a language tree. They're all related. No religion can exist without its foundation and being grafted onto something that humans have prior believed.
Or they couldn't graft it on because no one would go along with it.
It has to be ancient and old enough in our mindset for us to even take a small step there. So, you know, what's the point? Let's see. The point is that high cultures fell in the year 1325. This is also when the Aztecs enter Mexico, and they're not per se indigenous at that
time.
Where
did they come from?
Well, official history says they came from the north in the Bering Strait. Their own history say they come from the Pacific Islands, and they look very Asiatic. They're very short. They have very Asiatic straight hair, mm-hmm. very symmetrical features.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm. And the northern Mexicans, they're mostly from Guadalajara, and these were the ones controlling Monte Alban, which was the sorcerers up in the mountain where even the British had officials, Sir
now,
Francis
where is
Bacon.
Just
south.
Alvin,
just so if
south.
You think about Mexico City, there's like these two main temple cities. One's a little bit south than the other. But this one was...
So Monte Alban was one, and what was the other?
And the other one is Tenochtitlan and Tenochtitlan. And those are...
And where was that?
They're in the
north.
Center of Mexico. In the center of Mexico City, around Mexico City. And Monte Alban's a little bit more south towards like Oaxaca and the highlands. It's because they somehow traveled that little piece of land, and then the Spanish controlled the whole Pacific Ocean. And they had fleets. So we don't. The landmass confuses us in how boats can travel, but the landmass, just wipe that little out of your mind, because they either migrated on the landed routes through the mm-hmm. Gulf of Mexico, or they traveled through the ports in Central America.
And they
America,
had the Camino Real.
And they controlled the Camino Real. And these same Castro family had land all the way down into Guatemala. They controlled, whoever controlled
wow.
the oceans were controlling the land. When the mm-hmm. Spanish lost mm-hmm. Spain and the Castellanos, because see, the Moors actually helped the Castellanos come to power. The Castilian, or the who we call today the Spanish, they've actually stolen who were the real Spanish. Spain was not a nation state. Spain is a name of a woman, of a Roman wife, of a southern Spanish marriage to the Moors. And it was the same kind of Tiberius Augustus Caesars at this time. Mm-hmm. So Tiberius the Bosque, he had not only his fame in where we know him from a history book of the Caesars, but Tiberius the Bosque is Tiburcio Vasquez, the name of the famous Mexican bandit who was smeared and lynched here in 1876.
Right here in Santa Cruz.
Right here in Santa Cruz.
The Pacheco Pass or something?
They were set up in a stagecoach robbery on Mount Madonna or the Pacheco Pass, and
it's
it went
amazing.
Down as history.
You're bringing such an expansive history right down here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we're not able. So one of my prime interests in all of my research is to try to see a better history, a better story than what we're given. And that story has to do with looking really at the Southwest Mexican history, and that takes looking at Spanish history. And careful look at Spanish history yields long wars for thousands of years between dukes, princes, caliphs, and the children of the caliphs, the royal Shiite bloodline, the line of Muhammad, the line of the queens.
Do you want to say a little bit about the caliphs, who they were?
Well, so this is the mythology. And again, let's go back to Chaco. So what's about Chaco is this sacred space and the numerology.
The sacred geometry that is also here in Santa Cruz, and as you had said earlier, was inverted.
It was inverted. So the sacred geometry basically was inverted.
Not so in Chaco Canyon.
It was destroyed in Chaco Canyon. By 1325, it's destroyed. So there's plans going on in the Americas we don't understand, because in 1325, the Spanish supposedly aren't here yet. You know who are here? And it's very interesting, but it's the Assyrians. It's the Saracens, where we get the word Sasanian. It's called, it's also where we get the word Hassanian or assassin. It's where we get the word hashishin, hash, marijuana. And marijuana is really tightly tied to Mexico. Yeah? You know, they go together. It's like an indigenous plant
so
to Mexico
the
these days today.
Between the Mideast and Mexico again.
In the plant. If you think about what's grown in Afghanistan and what's growing in the Muslim culture, you see, look at that plant itself. It's a symbol of the lunar orbits. The marijuana leaf, I have to tell you guys all the symbolism.
Tell me.
Well, it's just too funny. I can find it in everything, can't
you
I?
Can.
Well, that plant as a hallucinogen.
That's the sacred geometry again.
And they used the hallucinogen in the sacred temples. On the Moorish temples, on the eastern side of the Santa Cruz Mountains, I'm sure they were using cannabinoids. We have more receptors in our body for cannabinoids than any other receptor. And receptors are key specific, which means it only binds to cannabis. And we have more receptors for that in the human body than any other receptor. So it's part of our makeup, our culture. Don't really understand it. Why?
So it's medicine.
It was medicine. It's like a hallucinogen that they used to kind of open and connect to a higher order when they were practicing in the order of the regular canons of San Augustine.
So of course it would be illegal, because it does open up awareness.
And
if
it
there
also
are those receptors
ties you
if
straight.
It's not abused.
It
also
right.
What? I'm sorry.
Right. Right. You took it
if
to what it
secretly.
Did in your mind, and I took it to what it uses in the material, in the physical world, how highly it's associated with criminality and the emphasis of like the drug trade in Mexico. That's
total
a huge propaganda.
Of it.
It's a huge propaganda. The corruption in Mexico is government based and paramilitary based, supported and funded by the United States. So forget the little Camino Real. Just get it out of your head.
It's
because
gone.
The Mexicans run across in underwear. I have to tell you, that's your terrorist. He swims across in underwear or wet clothes. Once he gets across the black water, we call the Aguas Negras, because the north of Mexico is an open slew dump of, I don't know how to even say it. It's a word I don't even know.
Garbage? Sewer?
Yes, sewer. There's a river and there's a sewer that they cross. This is very dangerous health hazards.
You're not kidding.
And you know what they do when they get across? They rinse out their underwear in the river and hang it on a tree. That's how dangerous these people
Good
are.
Lord.
And then the grandmas get
no
across
risk is
on the shoulders of their son-in-laws. Can you imagine having to climb on the shoulder of your son-in-law? That grandma story, she hated that event.
Your grandma?
It's a real story I heard from a woman, a little old woman in Chihuahua, Mexico. She told me, can I tell you the story? And
well,
she told me.
When survival is at stake, anything is possible.
It's so
a
funny.
Desperation.
Well, the borderland is basically the Camino Real. I lived on that road for 20 years, which means I'm an expert in bicultural studies, bilingualism, the study of the ancient architecture, and then coming to Santa Cruz, just to entertain myself, I needed to find the old sites. But I couldn't find them as easy, because adobe is not solid in California temperature, and it's wood I had to learn to understand. And then what I learned about the wood was all the horrible inversions that actually took place by the Scottish
Order.
Can you
talk about those a bit?
So the main shows I think we've done in the past and that are posted on Radio for All, and they're on Indie Bay Media.
Radio for All, the Belly of the Beast. You have to go there on the upper right-hand corner to listen to our past shows.
Yeah.
They're all archived there.
Uh-huh. And they're awesome, and they tell the story in a more complicated way, because as you can see right now, I'm really out there, you know, pulling a lot of strings from very far away. But the real foundation...
Well, you are fasting now, too, and you're still doing a great job. She's fasting for the month, for Ramadan.
So these are the basic tenets of Ramadan, and let's try to get them back in. First of all, the Sufi dervish that practiced here and the Franciscans.
So the mystic.
Yes, and the Franciscans of the De Anza expedition, they are Moors, and they are Muslims. The British were also working with the Moors at this time, with the Vispanics, and they, even Queen Elizabeth, advocated for the overthrow of Mary the Scots. Mary of the Scots?
Yeah.
Okay. The British children were also being protected here in this land called Mexico. And the Anzoans were both white men, Brits, just like Francis Bacon, and they were black men, Moors.
So
just
this
like
separation of Morelos. Brits and some
we
Scots
have to stop doing
from
that.
Mexico. I agree with
and
you.
And I finally found where we come
we,
together.
You and
I'm
I are doing
happy.
It very well.
The Saxon
know.
Is uh-huh. who attached himself to the destruction so that we can even curse the Anglo by calling him an Anglo-Saxon the whole time. But the Saxon actually overtook the Anglo and then put his name together. So just like when these same people, they were the Scottish Order of Grey Friars.
They all conquer and divide again.
And they did it even with language. And then they did it with roads, then with ports, then with... So this is what happened to Santa Cruz, is that they destroyed the main port of entry. So where that big butte is in front of the mountain in front of the boardwalk, where you can kind of hike that mountain and see the boardwalk, it's called Third Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Third Street in Maine.
Yes.
That was a moat that protruded from water and allowed boats passage on both sides of that moat.
And how long ago would you say?
This happened.
When
this
was that destroyed?
Still working. These were still... They're destroyed in 1890s. By 1895...
Fairly recent.
Mm-hmm. By 1890s. The governor was still alive in 1876. He was lynched by a gang of breakaway they call Puritans. But, you know, it's bullshit. It was infiltrated American government.
What did you call them in the past?
No, the Bango
no-name,
Boys.
The Bango Boys. The no-name Bango Boys.
Yeah, the Bango Boys. These men... they're the family of the Bush family. They're here for more than 130 years. And then the other family is the corrupt takeover of the Hines family. And then there was the intermarriages between those two families. Mm-hmm. So where Klaus Spreckels married the youngest daughter of Hines, and that's Mary Agnes, but they call her here Mary Case. Her name is on the streets right by the high school. Mm-hmm. And Mary Case turns out to be the great aunt of my grandpa, who was born in 1907.
Now, what's the reason behind giving people many different names or changing their names subtly?
It was easy. That's part of the land grab, part of robbing titles and disinheriting others through subtleties in name change. So they actually moved so much money through murder and disappearance of women. So we talked about that last time.
And that's
time.
What's happening now in
Mexico.
Chihuahua.
Mm-hmm. So the disappearance
same
of women.
Reappearing there.
Right. The huge orphans being product of mothers going missing. Orphanage. So they controlled. The Winchester Mansion was used as an orphanage by Klaus Spreckels and Mary Agnes. Huggins was her other name. Heath is her other name. Klinger is her other name, spelled backwards redneck. She had red hair. She wasn't very pretty when she was young, but she was pretty
and how
she was
do
old.
You know that it's the same individual? You're very good
uh-huh.
at that.
Well, because I put all of their documents on top of each other.
Their birth records and years of birth.
Yes, so definitely.
And parents,
yes,
lineage.
Yeah, headstones. I met Mary first through her headstone, and then I worked backwards who she was. And then I learned about the Heath family first in the cemetery, and then I worked backwards who that family was. And then I found the Williamsons, and those turned out to be the evolution of the Ku Klux Klan.
And then you may see her periodically haunting antique stores.
Yeah, and
and
I have devoured
further
everything.
Validating your
I
research.
Found the box of the Porter family I've dug through. I have dug through the stuff of the Wells family, which is the origin of the Wells Fargo. I know where the McPherson line comes from, and it's the same line. The McPhersons, it's a made-up name. They're not really no McPherson, and they're not Irish. They're probably what they believe, because that's what I was told as well.
What do you think they are?
They're Scottish, and they're intermixed with the Southern Spanish Hispanics and Moors that were robbed here, the women. So, yeah.
There's again an intermarriage.
Yeah, so Douglas McPherson, he was born in 1830. They called him Baby Doogie. He went missing in 1834. His mother was, I believe, a sister of Hines. So she actually faced the similar trauma of the Mexican women that went missing. She was missing 4 years after her little son went missing. She was very young, about 28.
So the women were largely just breeders for
yes.
the men's inheritance.
Mm-hmm. And their reproductive rights were taken care of, controlled. And that's
yeah.
what we face today politically. And the same people that are putting these issues on the ballot are the same colonizers, and they're called Mormons.
Oh,
My grandma was a servant to the Mormons because she came back as a maid.
And they have quite a control over our ancestry, too.
And that's where I found a lot of the data in their battalion files.
I just want to get back to the inversion again of Santa
Cruz. Yeah, let's see if we can do it. All right, so there was this famous mansion in Capitola that was a landing site under the southern Spanish government of Joe Castro. He also was, he worked at the White House, the Mexican White House, which is the Rispin Mansion. And this mansion they're now destroying completely. They're going to remove it instead of rebuild it, because to rebuild it will tell the secrets that they're hiding. It's not Rispin, it's Austin. And it's not, Austin's not his last name. He was the leader of the Austin Rangers that chased the Mexicans out of here into North Texas.
Wow.
This is the evolution of the Klan in the 1870s. That mansion that faced southwest in Capitola, it was a beautiful, all multicolored, and it reflected in the water. It was a magnificent sight to see that all different colors of this 160, or it was more like 110 room mansion reflecting on the Pacific Ocean.
Oh.
This mansion was land grabbed. There was a staged fire in 1907, the same time that they staged the fire in the Palace Hotel in San Francisco. That wasn't rebuilt. That wasn't built in 1877. That's a straight forgery. I'll just have to say that. Anyways.
When was it?
Well, Joaquin Castro led the band there, and he died in 1838. So, and it was already there for his whole lifetime, and he died an old man. So it's a 1700 building. They won't tell the truth ever. Because, see, to move the dates helps us conceptualize history under the American government. That's why everywhere you look, there's a little sign that says, founded 1851, because that's when they signed the peace treaty.
Of course, so the Mexican history is obliterated.
Uh-huh. And the peace treaty was...
And not accounted for.
Was just completely wiped out, because that peace treaty, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, he was an Anzoran who controlled the Camino Real. He helped fight for Mexican independence from Spain. This man's name, got my point, I don't know what I was trying to say about him.
Well, we were talking about the inversions, and then we went into the Rispin Mansion.
Oh, okay, let me tell you then. The Magnolia Rose, so the Rispin's in ruins. You could traverse to it by water, but the landing site, the magnificent hotel.
And part of the inversion, you said, was what was water became land, and what was land became water. And how we can see that today. Throughout Santa Cruz, the dikes. And
so De La Viega Golf Course and Highway 1, right at that
off
point...
Off of Branch of 40, yes.
...is a dam. And there's a pump up in De La Viega Golf Course that used to pull the water from under this mountain and fill up Branch of 40 Creek. Branch of 40 Creek is a man-made cement dike that carried boats to a slough that met with the San Lorenzo River, and boats could enter and exit without turning around. And this slough went counterclockwise. Now, this was destroyed. The pump was closed and broken. Please go to the golf course and go find the pump. It's a big white rock.
It's not far from the stroke center, I think.
It's right by the stroke center. That pump was used to fill the Branch of 40 Creek to move the water to allow ships passage. Now, what happened? Lexington, on the other side, is where the water's contained now. They're pumping water away from its natural direction. And Lexington was a city. They drowned it. They drowned the city. Now, through Lexington, there were train tunnels that meandered right to where, like, the mystery spot is and allowed you to board a steamboat. And those steamboats meandered around Santa Cruz, just like Venice or Amsterdam. It was not a straight line anywhere. It was curvature. And that meandering ship or boat could see the Moorish temples, the teaching houses. You could see the Santa Cruz Mission Hill where the church was.
The teaching houses are where the sacred traditions were taught.
Of the Franciscans. That's in the Franciscan Order of San Augustine. And San Augustine
is part Muslim as well. It's mystic.
It's a mystic
Sufi
culture. And San Augustine is loved by every religion, but he very cherished by the Muslims. He himself is a North African Algerian Moor. And he's the ancestry. Well, he's born in the year 400, but I have to tell everybody.
Even his truth was distorted.
Everybody who's here
history.
Now, our genes have to go back to that year 400 at least, because we come, our genetics take us back to the creation of man. We just didn't all of a sudden appear, and like we're from the year maybe 1790 when they came from Ireland.
No, I don't think so.
So, really, George,
I mean, you have to think about it. I mean,
it's hard to grasp.
Commonsensical, though.
Right. It's hard to grasp, but everybody...
Because it's unfamiliar to us. We've been lied to.
And
so
we don't know history from the year 400. Why would we relate our ancestry to the year 400? But you know what? George Castro's ancestry and the people who had the land titles to St. Augustine, Florida, and Loseda, Florida... They're from the ancestry of San Augustine, and they're sacred Sufi mystics that were blood was sought after, and Hines actually murdered,
so
captured, killed, and burned.
So he may have had to take on a different tradition to survive.
So that's what they did.
Go undercover almost.
Uh-huh. And they became those capers that traveled in the... You know, they had those big, long red capes, and they traveled as priests.
Oh, yes, the capers, sure.
With the De Anza expeditions. Well, those expeditions are not like, oh, let's make an expedition to the north and see what's there. There were actually cities here and garrisons, so San Francisco was a garrison. This means it's a strong naval port defended by the Armada. That means armed Spanish Navy. And Joaquin Castro, who retired from these offices, he became the governor of Alviso in the year 1800.
And Alviso is now part of San Jose. Yeah.
And it's another drowned city. So
and you can tell almost. I was just up there recently going up to Mount Hamilton, and you could see the Valley of San Jose and then pockets of water. Mm-hmm. That looked very lush.
Mm-hmm.
And I shudder to think what would happen if we had a major earthquake, vulnerable we are to underwater.
And all of our bridges.
Flooding.
Right, because we're on a whole landmass that's connected by many, many bridges. And the roads here don't go parallel like they are going parallel to the beach.
No, they don't.
They used to come out of the mountains and go towards the ocean. And it was a very beautiful thing because you came out of the Lexington Mountain, the Xochitl Mountains, which is where we get the word SoCal, comes from Xochitl.
Oh.
Means flower, just like St. Augustine.
Oh.
And Florida means flowers.
Yeah.
The flowers at both ends of this great route in Florida and the Camino Real. It's called flowers. The Espinosa de las Floridas.
There's such a sense of beauty in their architecture.
It was. It was beautiful architecture.
And consistency in that.
Yeah, so what they did, you have to put in your heart that there's two different cultures. There's a Western-oriented culture, and there's an Eastern-oriented culture. So the Moors are Eastern-oriented. They use the lunar calendar, beginning of year starts on the Eastern equinox. The Aztecs used the same calendar. The Mayans used the lunar calendar. The Toltecs used the lunar calendar, and the Toltecs will take us back to the year 500. Okay, so we have a calendar that we can read. Not many people can read it. I stopped reading it because it was too much for me. But I learned to read that calendar, and I decided to stop reading it because I got overwhelmed.
But what overwhelmed you?
The power of information in that calendar and its representation.
What was some of that information?
It's a temple. It's a temple. So that lunar calendar is encoded in a 2-ton rock that was unearthed in Mexico, found with a 2-ton equivalent statue of the goddess of the snake. And she stands up still. She's not a snake on her belly. She's two upright snakes. That's why Quetzalcoatl means precious twins, because she's two snakes standing. But when those two snakes merge, her two eyes face front and she becomes a walking woman. And her skirt is a snake. And she herself is the same thing as the temple. But she's an upright one. But when the temple is decoded for a human, you would have to be like God looking down, and that pyramid becomes a circle. So now it becomes the quadrant of the four lunar positions to each quadrant. So now it becomes the marijuana leaf in all of its spinning and glory, right? In all of its pointing to all of its directions. That's it's also the 13th letter. It stands
so
for
that
the
symbol
sacred.
Is encoded in so much, in so many plants, and sacred geometry.
Yeah.
When people were aware of the significance.
When it was part of our culture to understand the stars, because the indigenous cultures...
Well, it still can, but just because it's not common knowledge, we can
common.
Do the unearthing, and you are the unearthing of the truth.
But all common men had this information in the past.
Common. Yeah.
All common men.
Folks like you and I.
Folks like me and you. The pyramid is itself a calendar of information. So if you take the head, because you know what an Aztec calendar looks like. Stand him up like he's a human and look at his head like he's looking at you. And then turn him, the head, completely to face the east. Now you turn the key, now it's ready to be read. He's read like God in a position on a sacred rock to be killed and his blood shed and captured for us, he has to lay down to die. And look, Quetzalcoatl dies for us just like Jesus.
And look at Christ, yeah.
You know, praise the Lord, we can make overlap. We don't have
to. And I
want to
say
to
Geronimo,
yeah.
Chief Joseph, and Crazy Horse as well.
And all the
many
saints that came to teach us.
The teachings. Yeah.
And many, many saints that stood up for these teachings were murdered. And then the royal blood of the prophets that were sent to us were sought after and murdered. And then their royal bones were taken and used for witchcraft. And we know this is common knowledge that Pancho Villa's bones are had by the Skull and Bone Society, I guess Harvard or something like that.
And I believe they have Geronimo's as well.
They have Geronimo's.
Now, what are they doing with Pancho Villa's?
They have Pancho Villa's head. They decapitated him just like they have John the Baptist's head. Where's his head? They thought that was a joke. I remember I read that the apostles only reclaimed the body. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing with the Governor Joe Castro. They have his head.
And a lot of this is oral tradition, so that many are witnessing the truth.
It's inside the Mexican culture strongly about Pancho Villa, who has him. And all I kind of am doing is extending a little bit these things, because lynching does mean you losing your head. And many of these people were lynched. And in these histories, it was a very brutal to lose your soul in that trauma. So the Governor Joe Castro, he was lynched too. So...
For those of you that are just tuning in right now, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm Janaea, your host, and I'm talking with Julia Lonergan, and she's the author of The Haunting of Mission Santa Cruz, Mexico, and we're touching upon many aspects of our history as she has literally unearthed some amazing information and putting pieces together of our spiritual history, our physical history, and who we are as human beings according to ancient calendars, one of which is the Mayan calendar, and the similarity between the Mayan peoples and the Muslims and the Catholic Franciscans. It's amazing. It's taken a lot of work. She's constantly unearthing this.
And the last things were the creepiest. So in my heart, I hope I'm going to be done pretty soon, because the moat of Santa Cruz, where Third Street is, that moat, it's a big mountain that kind of all of a sudden protrudes right in front of the boardwalk.
Yes.
That was where boats went. I can't emphasize it enough. To the right side is now where the San Lorenzo River's been moved, if you're looking towards it east. And the other side was drained. And the land grab included the robbery of the houses and mansions in Davenport and via the Brands Authority and moving those into a drained waterbed. And then we drowned a city. So a live city, we drowned.
And that's Lexington.
That's Lexington. It's underwater. I don't know what's under there. I may never know. But I know what's here now, and we're living in a drained riverbed on the San Lorenzo River, and it's the Isthmus Inn.
So, the Isthmus Inn.
Like the entrance in to the city's been altered. The port's been altered. Boats are not entering anymore. No. And there's a deliberate closure of the port. If you think about in Seacliff, they put that old SS Palo Alto to block the port. And that's a protruding...
Where is that?
It's a ship that they call the SS Palo Alto that's in Seacliff right at the end of the wharf.
Oh, in Aptos.
It's degrading in Aptos. But you know what?
What was that?
That's the Ironclad Monitor, 1865. John Burke Jones helped the people off as it was sinking. Mormon Battalion Files, 1907.
Say that once more. What is it?
It was a steamboat that they put cement on during the American Civil War. They were ironcladding their boats. That's what we call ironclad, the Ironclad Monitor. But, you know, those steamboats couldn't go more than 10 miles an hour. So it's a joke out there, because they brought us one to show that they still beat us. Excuse me, plain to be a Mexican here. And then they blocked the port. So Santa Cruz ports are blocked. The main magistrate entrance that receives ships has been moved. That's the old hospital. The mansions that meandered close to this wonderful San Lorenzo River that made a nice little counterclockwise circle, those mansions have been moved. That's what land grab means, everybody. And the moving means that when they moved them, they wrote new titles for these mansions and could change the names. And then they could slightly change spelling because we're...
And it makes perfect sense, because then there's no record
of
what originally
record.
Was there. It doesn't look the same.
All of these things were found in antique photographs
take bits and pieces. And they're in your book,
art,
too, a lot of the photographs.
All of them. Each book has 70 color pictures of Santa Cruz. And I just wish I could get it out there for the tourists. They would love it, and it would help the Santa Cruz economy. And I don't see why we can't acknowledge our past and move on. It may even help us. Little by little, even the cemetery itself, it's quite cursed. You see, the Harvey West Cemetery was the location of these Moorish temples. Those were temples. That's a sacred eastern side of the mountain. Now, let me go back to the calendar. When you put his head up and you turn him to the east, that entrance point is the sacred geometry of the east, west, and north-south roads. So when you're entering the temple through the east, you're actually entering through God's head, and that's the two eagle feathers of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
That's him. When he stands up, he's enlightened. But when does he stand up? He only stands up when he wakes up, and he wakes up on the new year in the equinox. And how did we capture this? In Chaco Canyon, there's a window that is made just for the sun at 12 noon on the eastern equinox.
Oh.
Whose house is this? Do you know that the Queen of Sheba herself had a window in her mansion, and she controlled a huge dominion? And she was a Muslim. You see, she was worshiping. When the sun came up, she would rise up to pray. But Solomon, King Solomon, who was one of the greatest kings, we had peace during the reign of King Solomon. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines, King Solomon. So everybody were probably related to royalty out there. But this queen, she heard of Solomon's greatness, and she made the pilgrimages, maybe from here. She came from Africa, but Africa and Moorish Africa was in Mexico. And she didn't have just the North African. North African Moors, under our Saint Joseph, had all of North Mexico, too. So there's no reason to exclude Mexico from African, North African history. So let me tell you the story of the Queen of Sheba. She was very intermixed, because the queens and kings intermarried with their brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Hines did. That's what he did to the children that they put in the orphanage.
Mm.
And the Queen of Sheba had a crooked leg and a very hairy one that looked like a goat or an animal leg, because it was distorted from incest.
That's how they recognized her. Mm.
And when she came to the temples, and they came on great caravan. This is one of the first major pilgrimages
here,
to Mecca. They went from here to Arabia.
Uh-huh. What is happening now? Because it is the month of
just
Ramadan.
Just be flexible and think that we could... Mexican, we're not just waiting for people to... discover us. We actually brought our knowledge into the Hindu Kush, the area of the Peshawars.
Yeah, there was a lot of interaction.
And all the names are the same. So like Kokopelli also means Aryuna, the same name, the red one. Their names are the same, of the same gods in the Riga Vedas, in the Bhagavad Gitas. You just have to read them. How can in the Bhagavad Gita they have cannabis butter and... corn beer, that's indigenous to Mexico, too.
I know. So there was so much travel.
They didn't tell us the truth about our history. We lost a high culture.
We're making the connections, though, now. And you can read between the lines when you know, and you can see similar symbols and understandings.
So basically, in Santa Cruz was a mission. So it was Mission Santa Cruz. The UCSC was the mission. So I actually think it's probably illegal to sell you an education up there. That mountain where we climbed to get our degrees, that's a state park. I don't think that's legal to sell an education.
Well, of course, everything is in a profit mode now in our economy. It's
the
way it's
set
up.
They love to donate that mountain to the university.
Everything is
The regents make $300,000 salaries themselves. And who's the president of the UC Regents if it's not the governor himself? You see, the governor, or like the marshals, the state assembly. So Hines was a state assemblyman. He was a land grabber. He was a murderer. He was an underground Ku Klux Klan. He was also a congregational minister. He was a trustee of the public libraries.
He didn't leave
libraries.
Any stones untouched.
Yeah.
He wanted to get into all aspects of our lives.
His youngest daughter, Mary Agnes, introduced the forgeries as Eli Lundy Huggins. And those are the forgeries that are on that big 1928 plaque in downtown Santa Cruz, that big monument. That monument stands at a head of a drowned river. And that little downtown, Front Street and Pacific, that ends at that big moat. Because you know how when you go down Front and Pacific, you actually have to go in a circle around the moat before you get to the beach?
Yes.
Well, that moat protruded from water, and I found it in an original painting, probably a 1700, late 1700 painting.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Yeah. And
so that was an inversion right there.
Well, So Santa Cruz was drained, and the city was built in a riverbed, and then Lexington was drowned.
Right.
And then to enter Santa Cruz in the past was counterclockwise, but now if you notice, Highway 1 goes north, it's a dam on the Sacred River, and before you enter Santa Cruz, you spin 360 clockwise. That's a deliberate inversion, only going north.
So what's the impact of that on us as we enter?
I don't know exactly, but I have a feeling direction. That I know. It's some.
What's the so purpose behind doing that?
I don't know. I have a feeling that a lot of it has to do with the mental illness, the drug abuse, the murder, the gang violence, the uncomfortable chaos in Santa Cruz, the tightness that
so
you feel.
So it creates
the
an
wrong
internal
energy.
Discomfort inside.
Because what was left under are mass graves. So the actual eastern side of the mission was a cemetery, and that's where Highway 1 traverses, where that little land bridge connects Vintage Faith and the old high school. You know how you can only take your bike across?
Yeah, yes.
Under
that
is a cemetery. And we all step on the dead as we climb up the Escalona Heights.
Mm.
So that's not Escalona Heights. It means heights of stairs. That building, that big white building called Piedmont Court, that means Pie de Monte. That means foot of the mountain. And the front of that building is the one that faces southeast, southwest. They moved the front of that building too. They just locked it up and then built a house there. So they took everything and took put a mirror. Imagine what, if you can imagine what I was telling you about an awesome city. They took the Magnolia Rose from Capitola and they broke it into its five major mansion pieces. One is 9 bedrooms, one is 4 bedrooms, one is 14 bedrooms, one is 11 bedrooms, and the rest is the Red Room bar. That's the Red Room's missing its rooms.
So these are all buildings, mansions, part of former mansions.
Dismantled,
scattered throughout.
Land grabbed, brought into the Santa Cruz riverbed. No, they're not scattered. They're all right here. And they're placed around a circle in the riverbed.
Not scattered.
This is why it's haunted. This is why I have to say that, you know, I'm playing with the idea of haunting. And people like the idea, but these things are historical trauma. And it does.
And that's what haunting is.
And that's what haunting is. It's historical trauma.
The
I'm telling you, the
spares that
trauma.
Aren't left. To rest.
We like our stuff in our afterlife. So these people, they were murdered in the Magnolia Rose in the year 1876 on the 22nd of April. Which day is that? This is the sacred Eastern equinox. And then they were murdered and their mansion dismembered and moved into the drained riverbed of a once former awesome, beautiful Xochitl flower city.
So much that was sacred was desecrated.
It was desecrated. The sacred teaching temples of the Order of San Augustine and the Franciscans on the eastern side was destroyed. The house foundations are still there. You can go see. I don't recommend anyone go there. If you go in, sing the whole time.
What do you recommend singing?
Love things, beautiful things, childish things. Be
so
simple.
Go in there with an open heart.
Yeah, because it's cursed.
And peace without any violence or anger in your...
You know the road that goes up that cemetery, how it like leads to nowhere?
Yes.
That road is deliberately moved. I believe that that road probably came from the front of the original mission. And you know where it leads? To the inverted back door of the Rodriguez Neri adobe. And that's an inverted church. And there's a piece, there's information in there, which means the mountain's in there. So the road leads to nowhere. And the original church, when there was an earthquake in 1857, Hines, under the name Hearn or Neary, Kearney, that's his name, Kearney, they're the Carnegie. They turned the building 180 degrees. And now the old road that actually led to that church are separated by the mountain. And the cemetery that was by the original church is uprooted and planted around the Harvey West. Around that road in the Harvey West.
So much to take in. It's appalling.
It's appalling.
So in this inversion, it creates a sense, as I said earlier, a sense of disconnect within yourself.
So the murdered people are wandering the mansions and their old grounds where they met and fell in love and studied. So in their past life, they're trying to live their life. And they're trapped going clockwise circles around the base of the Santa Cruz Mountain because their headstones are in the Harvey West.
And they were murdered brutally.
Their bodies are under the freeway. And their murdered houses are in a circle in the riverbed of Santa Cruz.
So that's what haunts this area.
This is what I have to say is
that... In their pockets, you can feel a sense of darkness walking through or driving through certain areas of Boulder Creek.
And I want to send my love to the women who have lost their children here, the youth of the children that have died here. And I want to tell them that I wrote this book for them so that they can understand what happened here. that we can all understand what's happening here, so we can be cautious and not easily led
to start to
point
heal.
The finger like we did in the past to the minority group that we've actually robbed.
Yeah. Continue to
rob.
Debase and
so
rob.
If you think about the Magnolia Rose in its pieces in a circle, so the McLaughlin Bean Mansion is on the mountain and it faces Santa Cruz. So Main Street goes straight up that butte.
Yeah.
And then there's no Main Street. It ends at that mansion. And you know how the back of it is that door that jumps off the cliff with an upside down cross? If you look around front and Pacific, there's a mansion up there right on the end. Its door hits the cliff because that was not there, was moved there. That moat never had houses. But that's where Main Street ends, and it's an upside down cross, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's Main Street, you guys. That's scary.
No wonder we never hear anything about Main Street in Santa Cruz.
There's no Main Street.
And why is
right
it
there.
Called Main Street?
And you it goes straight up Main, and then it's crossed by Third, and it itself is an upside down cross.
Oh.
And then where it should lead to. So in other
talk
words,
talk about our architecture.
Yeah, the house
cities.
Really belonged to the Empress of Mexico. And it was left to her family, who had intermarried into the Castros and the Basques, the Southern Spanish bearded. That's what Basque, Borbón means, big beard. You know how we would call the Spanish big beards?
Yes.
Barbones, Barbón. But, so yeah, this, when they're traveling one mansion into the next mansion, Cindy, they're thrown into the circle. And this circle is itself the drained riverbed. And then they're trying to find the other mansion. But they can't find the door because they're all disconnected. So by the time they find the other mansion, they exit and enter, that door also throws them back into the circle. So they're trapped inside something like a I don't know what it is in there, but Santa Cruz is a drained riverbed. The Magnolia Rose has been stolen.
They can't find their way home.
They can't find their way home.
Nothing. It looks familiar, and it's not. Then you try to recapture your movements as they were in the
right,
past.
Right, that's what they're doing.
And they're lost.
They're lost.
It's like you're in a
they're
you're
in a vicious
trapped.
Circle. And
it
is
that
a
thing,
vicious
it looks
circle.
The same, but you can't get out. So they only have bits and pieces of what was similar.
And you know that bell tower that stands at the
crazy
head of
making.
That downtown? That bell tower has been inverted a complete 180. So its front face was completely taken and turned around to be its back face. And it was an exact half of a circle. So if you look at where it was to where it's been, it's right on the exact compass circumference. And it's inverted right in front of that monument to the war heroes that actually contains the names of the murderers. You guys go see who they are.
Where's this?
It's that big monument that says to all the soldiers of all wars, hypocrites. Oh. Yeah, to all soldiers of all wars with the date of 1928. Go see if it doesn't say Jose Francisco Rodriguez. That's the governor that those men lynched.
Mm.
And that's their tribute to him. Can you imagine? They gave us a drained riverbed. Now, we might say, well, so what? We gained land in Holland. We gained land in Germany. We build dikes. We gained land. We build on land. But you know what? There's an indigenous culture that is being played with. We shouldn't be in the water people's. This is going to sound funny, but we shouldn't be in the water people's territory. And they in ours.
Oh, my.
So they're living
so
in a drought.
Life in
and
the
we're
water.
Living in, yes.
It's just it's another form of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's natural to them. So we go a little bit further. We're living in an environment that is unnatural.
Perfecto. Perfecto mundo.
Let's take a little break here.
Okay.
If you like, I just want to play. What do we want to put on? Let's see. Oh, I love Lal. And then we'll come back with some more of Julia. Let's see if this comes on here. Our computer is so slow. I'm grabbing something from YouTube. And this is a prayer from me to the victims in the flood in Pakistan.
जिगर की बात सुनो शहर की बात सुनो कलम रसीदा हूँ दमाने तर की बात सुनो उम्मीद शहर की बात सुनो जुबां बुरीदा हूँ हर्फ करो मेरे शहर की बात सुनो शिकस्ता पाहूं मलाले सफर की बात सुनो मेरे शहर की बात सुनो मुसाफिर अब इल्तफाते निगारे सहर की बात सुनो शहर की बात उम्मीदे 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 शहर की बात जिगर दरीदा हूँ जाके जिगर की बात सुनो
was Lal and their Pakistani group of lawyers, actually. And back, this is, you're listening to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. We're going on four. And with me is Julia Lonergan, and she is the author of The Haunting of Mission Santa Cruz, Mexico from 1708 to 1876. And she just finished volume 3, which goes into more detail about the haunting of the temples and the mansions. And we're just going to finish up with a bit more of a discussion on the hauntings and then how some of the, one of the mansions is going to be investigated by, I'm just learning this, a paranormal team of experts mm-hmm. real soon at the Bayview.
They're doing them already. They're, I think, every Thursday night at the Bayview. There's a paranormal investigating team, so people want to come and see some of the tools that they use, some of the...
When is this again?
Thursdays. I think it's Thursdays. You can call the Bayview. It's a great mansion. The family that lives there is awesome. They're very welcoming. It's kind of a strange house, but it's open to the public, and it's for everybody. Come there. It's awesome. But yeah, they're going to have some paranormal investigations, and they've already started, and they want me to team up because I can put the language and the history back on the architecture, and then kind of who lived here, what happened here, what dates it was moved, who's their relationship, where should they be. And then the team kind of sees if
so
there's any...
So it's a tour. And then the team goes in with their equipment and tests for the
And they've already have all
spirits.
Kinds of interesting results because the Bayview is haunted.
What results do they have?
They have EV... What are those? I'm not an expert in the technology, obviously, of paranormal investigation.
You're the historian.
I'm a historian.
Present day.
Yeah, present day. But they have meters that read energy, and they have some kind of equipment that can pick up electric signals or heat signals, or I don't know. They have stuff.
Wow.
I just get to walk around and go, oh, this is the room of
Cookie
Castro.
And you see the Geiger counter moving and the sounds coming.
Well, I see things moving in there without having any meters. So basically, the Bayview, again, let's apply the whole thesis of the inversion. The Bayview came from the Magnolia Rose. It came from Capitola. It was up on the mountain in Capitola. And that mansion has been moved twice. In its first move, it was moved to Aptos, and in its second move is when the actual papers of its existence come to life. So it's supposedly built in 1877, and of course it was not. It was built even before the death of the Empress in 1832. So we have to at least give the dates of the people it belonged to. It's not from the 1870s. It wasn't built by Spreckles. It was not always in Aptos. That mansion was moved there.
Who was given the credit for building it originally?
Joseph Arano. So they actually changed the name of Jose Joaquin Castro Moraga. And they lose the Castro. They lose the M in Moraga. And he becomes Arano. So Joseph Arano, it's a made-up name. It's not a real man. That room of the Joseph Arano room is a main master bedroom in the Bayview Hotel, and that room used to connect through a staircase to the Red Room.
The Red Room downtown in Santa Cruz, which is behind.
It's a very strange space.
Planet,
so Heinz actually
Fresh
moved
Planet
it there.
Restaurant.
That foundation, Planet Fresh, was built to hold the wooden pieces that were stolen from the Magnolia Rose. So the land grab of the Magnolia Rose included the dismemberment, and then this dismemberment, the Bayview went to Aptos, became the property of Klaus Spreckles and Mary Agnes Huggins, mm-hmm. Heath, whoever you want to call her, and then they took Rafaela Castro's mansion, which is up in Aptos Hills. That's called the Mangles Mansion. Her name was Mary Agnes, not Mary Mangles, but they strangled. Yeah. So that's a really good intermediary, Mangle versus strangle. So. That mansion was Rafaela Castro's. Rafaela haunts that mansion. Cookie Castro's mother was the heiress of Alviso property from Stanford to Berkeley. She had 160-some thousand acres. She was a little German sister of the President Lincoln.
And there is now an Alviso Park.
Yeah, Alviso Park. I don't know her real name because they call her Maria, and then her other name is Antonia Alviso, but it's the San Antonio land grant, so they mix up the land grant name with her name. And then Alviso is where she governed. Her husband was the governor, and she owned that land. So her name, I don't know her name. Her name has become Maria, her land grant, and the land,
names.
The capital. But her, she's the mom of Cookie Castro, Amelia, and Amelia haunts the Bayview. Her name is still on the plaque of her room.
Wow.
And she's the daughter, actually, of Cookie Castro and Samuel Prescott Bush. And Samuel Bush went under the name here McLaughlin Bean, and he shot his own daughter, Carrie Bean, in the head at the age of 21 to secure the Alviso money for the Bush family. That's how they got it.
So they know wherever the money is, they're bound to follow.
Yeah, watch out. Arrange marriages. Because Cookie Castro was already divorced from him. Mary Agnes became his wife. So you see, Mary Agnes had a baby with Cookie Castro, same husband.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like half sisters. You know, there's a lot of... He raped the women. So land grab didn't include just stealing the mansions, but they stole the women. And there was an arranged marriage for her.
The culture.
Right. And so then little Carrie Bean was murdered, but she was photoshopped into a picture with the Bechtel children in 1917 so that they could move the Alviso money through Spreckles to Bechtel. Bechtel and Sprechtel are the same word.
How did you discover that?
I just played with the information long enough till it started to overlap exactly. I was wondering where Spreckles comes from. It's one of the only names I don't know. And I have two. Brechtel. Sprechtel. And then I also have...
And that's your background. You had studied that. How to
the evolution
how to decode
of language.
Mm-hmm. The evolution.
Mm-hmm.
How appropriate for you to come here and start decoding
our street names just for fun.
And look what you've unearthed, and it keeps growing.
No. And it's wild. So it's like Santa Cruz is a sacred mountain.
My goodness.
And it was actually
You must have been shocked as you started to uncover this. I'm still shocked in a way. And then, you know, we talked a bit about the similarities in Lincoln County.
Yeah, they're all related. I really believe that Maria Antonia...
Some of the Bingo Boys, for lack of a better term,
right, it's them.
Went down.
They broke into two groups and kept fighting each other with their power extending through media.
And
so
who
they
were
the newspapers.
Players?
The McSweeneys, that's the side of Billy the Kid.
Billy the Kid is
James Williamson, and Amos Williamson's name is on that monument.
Sisters in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who was that?
The Austins.
Yes.
The Augustins. The Gustin gang that actually overtook probably the automotive technologies. So.
No.
What did the Gustin gang do?
Oh, they were originally in grocery stores.
Oh, yeah.
In the Boston area. Food, the control of food.
Yeah.
But boy,
hardware. Cookery. Crockery. Yeah, crock pots and stuff like that.
And you've got a mason, too. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about them, and they were Scottish and
English.
My father disowned them. He said, "Oh, you don't want to know about them. They were gangs, just Boston street gangs, you know. Don't want to know about them. They're in the ancient history." I said, "Dad, I do want to know about them." So I moved to Santa Cruz and find out.
Yeah, so the name Gustin, it either can come from Augustine.
Oh, I'll take that.
Yeah. So then that would be the order of St. Augustine, which would be a very sacred,
Well, there's
very
so many dualities
name.
Here. We play different roles in our
Yeah,
history,
we play different roles.
Our lineages.
So basically, we're going to have Paranormal Investigating at the Bayview. That's happening on Thursday. They have breakfast, lunch, and dinner menus.
What time
menus.
On Thursday? Thursday evening.
Yeah, I think they do on Thursday evening. But anybody interested, come and hang out. Ask questions. We get to explore parts of the rooms, parts of the mansion. If I'm there, I can story tell at the same time and see who actually is there, and they can read with machines just to, I don't know.
And if they speak with you, you may be able to tell them a little bit about their last name and their lineage.
Oh, yeah, I've gotten really
just
good.
Just to get an idea. She's great. And to start reading the architecture of your home, possibly, or where you're living now.
Mm-hmm, for sure, for sure.
Looking around the yard as well.
The one famous Mexican...
She's a hawk. Her eyes don't miss a thing.
Yeah. The famous relationship that everybody knows about the Castros, one of the old stories that we tell and retell is of the crying woman that travels the Camino Real and the Rio Grande River, which is the border of Mexico now in Texas, how she cries. She travels in the water and cries looking for her children. We call her La Llorona, the woman who cries. That's what it means. La is the female pronoun for her, and llora is to cry. La, she, Llorona. Who cries? She who cries. Well, Rafaela Castro was murdered by Klaus Spreckels and two other of the Bango Boys. Those were Hein's oldest sons with the missing Carmen Pacheco.
You know what's interesting? When I first learned that the Bayview was haunted and some other of the mansions in Santa Cruz, they were just lightly dismissed as...
Whatever.
Yeah, just a haunting. Yes, there are spirits in there. Without the historical context of where they may have sprung from.
Right.
The horror... That these
they don't have
are
the historical
to.
Context. What
no,
actually the Aptos Museum publishes is the forgeries introduced by Spreckels and Mary Agnes. And that's the forgery that Rafael Castro was a man. So they make Rafaela into a man. So if they say that Rafaela is Rafael, Colonel Rafael Castro, that's what the forgery is that Spreckels married Rafael Castro's daughter and inherited the land grant through Rafaela Castro, who was the actual daughter of the Empress of Mexico. And the Castro.
Well, this was Mexico.
It was
Mexican land. So in order to take it and make it look like it was legal and neatly packaged, everything had to be distorted.
Yeah.
And
so
quickly,
Spreckels.
Fires were happening all over the place. You had to destroy
murders, children's becoming orphans. Even the Hein's children becoming orphanages.
That were mansions.
Orphans.
In architecture that looked
The Bechtel Moorish, children were raised as
you
orphans.
You can't have that. And then all of a sudden make the culture... very, to this day, demonic and
linear.
In the eyes of Christianity, when really there's so many similarities.
Well, and the whole paradox is that it was a Christian religion, and that's what was so confusing, because even the Salem witch trials were about collaboration, deception, propaganda, yeah. staging, and inversion of indigenous ritual and religion, which was actually based on herbs and geometries.
Yes, yeah, largely women of property. And
they were women, matrilineal
medicine
lines.
Women learned, one of my ancestors, Estes, was one of those witches, and learned about it from my family. She just happened to have property and know a lot about herbs. She was a threat to the powers that be, as well as the other witches. Another example.
And what'd they do
to
her?
It's a history of, she was burned.
What's, where in Massachusetts?
Salem.
Oh, Lord. That's where Henry High Cron came from. High Cron of Cron 4 News. Henry High Cron, he was one of the highest ranking Freemasons of the Blue Mystic Shriners here in the 1890s. Oh. And he came from Salem, Massachusetts.
Well, I don't come from there. I'm from another town in Massachusetts.
Salam.
But
let me tell you, in Arabic, we say salam. It means peace.
Yes, salam.
Malikum. Alikum. That means, and then you say it backwards to them. So do you see? The Mayan Popol Vuh watch goes forward and backwards in exact verse. It's like there's a sacredness even in the movement of the literature in the Sufi mystic culture. Anybody who reads Hafiz or Rumi will know the magic.
Sure, the beauty of poetry.
Yeah, and that poetry was itself a geometry. So the sacred Popol Vuh, that was the last book that was written in 1516 at the close of the last age, it was written in Roman.
In Guatemala. And
yeah, it's a Mayan book. It's the Mayan. And that name, Popol Vuh, if you look at what the Pope holds, he reads, that's the same name of the books he opens. So these were old books written. Somebody knew the oral legend, and it was written down how the end came to the 12 generations of the... Who? The 12 generations. Every culture has this idea of 12 tribes gone. Or 12 generations
gone.
No
accident. No.
So yeah, the Muslims are believing in the apparition of the last imam or the last ruler. So that's the same. They want the number 12, which would mean 13. Every time 13 comes,
and then we go back to the lunar
we go to
calendar.
Zero. Right.
Yeah.
There's only 12 plus a zero. That's the 13. 13 is itself magical. 13 is a zero, and 13 is itself the one. He's right.
So
God,
Friday
it's a God.
The 13th isn't a curse. It's a day of beauty and possibility.
That's right.
And we can reclaim 13 stories, our 13th
That's
story
right.
on buildings.
So like the 12 tribes of Israel lost, the 12 indigenous tribes of North Mexico are missing for reals. We have 12 tribes lost in North Mexico. Yeah, we only have 4 tribes that have been forced into the mountains, and they survived because they could traverse the mountains. They were the actual people that moved treasures for the kings in the mountains. So when the Spanish, the northern Spanish... The Catholic Germans, the Austro-Hungarians, the Italian-based Scots. I mean, you guys, it's very complicated.
It is. And yet it isn't.
And then it's not. It wants to make sense
to
us.
You just look for the 13 and the 12 lost tribes wherever you go, and you'll find them.
And look, the M is the 13th letter in the alphabet. It has everything to do with Mexico, the name, the number, the people, the plant.
Marijuana.
So the symbol, what you see when you look at the cannabis leaves is itself a symbol of the Moorish window in Carmel, Mission Carmel. Think about the window when you look at that mission. It's one of those, it's a spinning 8-pointed star.
What is the significance of the spinning?
Spinning, it just means that the earth and its stellar objects move. And the Sufis mimic.
They mimic that, sure.
Yeah, and migrations we're mimicking. And in building, we mimic. The way we build represents our understanding. So the people that build...
The way buildings were built.
There you go.
Now.
Yeah, the way buildings were built is a lot of information based on...
Can you say a little bit about that?
Well, so the order of the Eastern stars would build towards the east. And Western-oriented religions were... It's like a woman fighting... Yeah, the rising sun. The Western focus everything towards the West. So if you notice, the church has been actually moved from southeast to northwest in an exact move. There's complete mirror inversions. There's not a hair left unanalyzed geometrically in what was done. And I don't fully understand, but I believe it to be the borderline of witchcraft.
So it's obviously with people, who had an understanding of sacred geometry.
And they broke
it. And architecture. Masons.
And they broke it. They knew how to break it.
Distort.
To distort it. So it's the same like when they conquered the Fort Mary and Barrie, they broke the name.
It takes the inherent sense of power away from the individual with the heavenly realms.
They took that away from us. I mean, and now we have scientific method. I was working
which
on...
Which is so dry. And we're working to reclaim science and spirituality.
And to put the two back together, teachings. Like Sir Francis Bacon at one time. He's the founder of science, scientific method. But he's also a mystic studied in Monte Albán, where all the sorcerers practice.
Monte Albán in Mexico.
Yeah, how can these...
That sacred mountain.
Right. These could be reconciled. This sacred mountain, I believe, too, the Fremont Peaks is another sacred mountain. Fremont put his name when he tried to claim this land. So supposedly Fremont came and raised the American flag in 1853 for Americans. You see, that doesn't matter because the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was a treaty that ended the Mexican-American War. California agrees to be ceded as a state, but each state runs its own politics, basically. So didn't have the right to come and put up his flag and take it for America because in 1853, the governor, Joe Castro, was reelected, and it was the United States. He was lynched after this was the United States of America by people who did not obey the law. It was not lawless, but they turned it around on us.
Right. They created law according to what they wanted done, accomplished.
And then the criminality became... Like in the Salem witch trials, they dug up so much fear and prejudice in the populace, the ignorant populace, that they could actually say how dangerous it was for them. And if you look at any of the old cowboy movies, that's what the theme is how dangerous it is for them and how they had to actually kill all the Wild West. The West was wild. It wasn't wild. They came and made it really wild. That's when even the Indians lost their land to the American allotment, Indian allotment.
To this day, Guatemala still feels. It's a lawlessness that is forced upon the people by usually paramilitary forces.
And that's if we don't get it together.
And still fear in women, children. Yeah.
We're so close right now. Look at what our governor's even saying about working closer with the Mexican government. And they're drudging up. They're drudging up the drug war and all the killings in Mexico, where there's more killings than in Afghanistan and Iraq. And they're using this to say that it's a drug war having to do with illegal immigration. But the United States and the Mexican government control that border, and they control the drugs in Afghanistan and Mexico that do supply the drug trade. That's one thing that was taken over a long, long time ago, was the drug trade. The government's at the heart of the movement of all that. Mexico's government does run on drug money, period. Period. And we staged the war. We closed the border in 1853. We had Pancho Villa attacking a line in the sand in 1928. There was no border. The people that reestablished that border are the Clintons. And that's McClintock. And they're involved in these gangs that were part of the Lincoln County Wars, too.
The Lincoln County Wars in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of what followed after the destruction here. It was 1878-79.
Those gangs went down into New Mexico.
Yes, and they started fighting. Well, you don't know where they are, because if you think about a politician, he can almost work from anywhere. He can have multiple posts, too.
Almost like a drug lord from prison.
So the Ohio senator in 1877 was Rutherford Hayes. And he was replaced by Samuel Bush. But Samuel Bush...
As a senator
to the state of Ohio. And also, this same man had a different name, and he was the actual U.S. Marshal to New Mexico. And that's Olinger, but that's Mary's husband, Klinger. And I found those things.
Now, wasn't that Billy the Kid?
That was the man who allowed Billy the Kid to escape. And that's how it works. Go ahead and murder.
No
when
wonder
they pick
he was
you
able
up,
to
I'll
escape
let you
from
out.
Jail.
He had infiltrated both sides.
And do that little fancy footstep. I'm reading about it historically.
He was a spy on both sides. He might have very well been one of Hines' sons.
But
you never
we
know.
Have to make this history alive.
The history is so alive.
It's not just myth. These individuals' descendants still work today.
Oh, yeah. In other words, you know how they say that we've made it back to the 1950s, that the smallest percent of Americans own the largest amount of wealth in the country, like 5% own 95%, something like that. That's little 5%. Those are the Mormon colonies. and they're all interrelated, and they're all doing favors for each other. And many of these people that work in the media and that are reporters and have all these great cushy jobs, they have that.
They're
through
Mormons?
Well, I like to play with that word because it's not the
many claim
Norman.
To be Protestants, usually Episcopal.
Yeah.
And that's a sweeping generalization.
No,
it.
Yeah, it is, and also Catholic. But yeah. It's the idea of
but
Mormon colonization.
Mormon.
Because what's happening here is the use of the church for incest and rape and huge families.
And it's Mormons.
Mm-hmm. So Gilbert Smith, like, he was a Episcopalian. Well, he had 30. He was Italian-based. Okay, look.
John Smith, the founder of who you...
Yeah, John Smith is even a founder. Oh, my goodness. He even comes from the old Grey Friar, Gilbert Smith. The Smith
discovery.
Family. That's the maiden side of the Bush family. That's the Smiths. So, yeah. Santa Cruz has some hauntings, but these things are unwinding because they're coming out. It's been a history that's been undercover for 133 years. The unofficial history is what I'm telling you, but all the players and the landmarks people can put
and
together.
I just want to say that as you are listening to this, allow your imagination to reveal the truth to you and know that it's a cliche, but the truth does set us free. It ends the confusion and the distortion. You start to see similarities and connections and have a deeper understanding of where you come from. We need to know our past to know who we are today so that we can go forward with clarity and truth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're feeling like you're not sure what's going on, there's a lot of confusion, look at history. Try it out. Do your own research. We're asking you to do that. If you find this difficult to understand or to grasp, do your own research. See what you come up with.
Mm-hmm. The good place are the De Anza census.
It's going to be a lot of fun, too.
The census data of the De Anza expeditions, you can find all the Castros. And when they really get distorted is after the Maine murders in 1876.
Because we really, as human beings, have a rich heritage to draw upon, a rich spiritual heritage to draw upon. And it's our right to claim that.
And the Anzarins were black and white.
Yes.
And we were Brits and Moors and Spanish and French. And we were all working together here.
Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful to look at the differences and to respect them from different cultures, not to tear them apart and try to become like someone else or have them be like you.
And the Moors are also Native Americans.
Yeah, oh, tell me.
Well, if you think about it, they're building the early adobes here in the 1830s. We don't even really know how early. If I tell you this, it's very hard to substantiate, but I really believe this, is that the Assyrians built America. Assyria built this country. Assyria.
Oh, boy, would that be blossoming? How do you say that?
Everything that was stolen, everything was stolen. The East Coast was not built, you know. Was not the forts that were overtaken, Fort Marion Barry in Florida, when America declares its independence from Great Britain and calls to have its own nationhood status.
Mm-hmm.
That fort was taken by the Brits, and the Brits took it from the Spanish, and the Spanish had built it under probably the Median and the Persian and the Syrian Babylonian. I mean, Media, Persia, and then we have the rise up then of Greece and Rome. They're latecomers.
Yeah.
But Western-oriented culture looks towards Greece and Rome, and these are the people that destroyed everything of the Franciscan order in Scotland. That's the most haunted cemetery in Scotland. It's called the Grey Friar Cemetery. Mary Agnes' name was Breyfogle or Grey Friar, right? She's the wife of Spreckles. These are the same killers. Then they came, they're descendants of the same killers. Then they came into the Floridas. They had multiple sackings of the fort in St. Augustine, which is the sacred object, the beheading of Francis Bacon, the usurpation of that fort from the British by the Americans.
What, Fort Barry?
Yeah, Fort Marion Barry. And then
Barry.
We have the flight of the Anzarins, the French,
the
Moors.
And then you have to look at the significance of the name Marion Barry and the Barry and its geometry. What does it look like? Do you know?
Yeah, the Marion Barry. It's a blackberry. It's from the family of the Rosacae. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's the root word is rose, and then it says C-A-E. That's the plant
rose.
Family that the rose, the Marion Barry, are from the same family.
Oh, interesting.
And the same petals of a flower that spin, and
uh-huh.
The same complicated DNA.
So what can you say
DNA?
About the spinning of that of the rose in the DNA of the rose?
Well, it has to be a key to the teaching houses. Something sacred took place on these sacred sites. So we didn't build and say, this is a sacred mountain, let's come to class here.
Why did they choose that with the rose, with the Mary and berry? They knew something about flowers. They knew something about the land.
They knew something about the berry and the representation of our ancestry in that complicated little berry.
DNA.
I don't know. It's so hard for me to even understand.
I know.
But you know where they are?
But there is something to understand.
They're all over the cemetery. They're growing still. And I saw people picking and eating them.
They don't know what they're eating.
In the Harvey West Cemetery, there's blackberries growing because there used to be a fruit orchard there.
Yes.
There was a fruit orchard, so yeah, they're growing there.
And we're so drawn to them, and they're so juicy. And
they used to dance.
Healing.
The twirling dervish creates a whirlwind, and that whirlwind in all indigenous cultures is itself sacred. It can be destructive.
We call it yumni.
Really?
Uh-huh.
In what culture?
The Lakota.
In the Lakota. Yeah. In the Sufi culture, if you see like in Arabian Nights, those when the sands pick up, they all of a sudden, all the magi fall to their feet and put their face on the ground. Because when the sand
the
lifts.
Same.
Yeah, because in you're a desert, when the whirlwind comes, it becomes a sand tunnel. And when you're in the water, it becomes like water tunnel. And when you're in the desert, you know, it's the.
You can be entangled and swept up and thrown out.
So I don't understand all these paradoxes. So there's the paradox of the berry,
yeah.
The DNA spiral, the DNA strands, yeah, weather patterns. I know in the Mata...
The spiral in our dance, in the dervish dances, and the spiral in the DNA of the
and
rose.
The spiral in the Aztec calendar, and the spiral entrance through the east that goes counterclockwise. You see, to destroy the spiral, they broke it and they made it go the other way.
Look, listeners, at where you see a spiral, what's really happening?
You know where there's the Mother Earth symbol.
It.
It's hard for me to know. I don't know all the landmarks, but in downtown Santa Cruz, right by that big red church, that Episcopal redwood church that's right by the taquerias behind those big parking lots, it's kind of like that out-of-place wooden church, red. It was moved there. I don't know what it's called because I barely saw this yesterday, but to the side of that church, inside the earth, there's a mother symbol made, Mother Earth symbol, built inside with bricks, rocks, and it circles a tree. And it takes 200 steps in that circle to get to the tree, but somebody's bifurcated it with the huge white cross.
Gosh, they didn't leave any stone unturned.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it means, but that building wasn't there. This is the way you check. Look at the building, then look at the foundation. Because these wood houses were brought from other places, and their foundations were built for
them.
Oh,
there's a big mismatch.
There's a big mismatch.
And you were talking about this the other day in regards to the old theater in Capitola.
Mm-hmm. You want to hear that story?
Yes.
Oh, everybody, if we could get people to focus on this, we may actually get somewhere. Funny. All right. So the Magnolia Rose was in Capitola, right on the Esplanade, right where the bathrooms are on the beach.
Mm.
Okay. Well, in that spot was a magnificent hotel. And in this hotel...
And now they're bathrooms.
Yeah, at five stories. Okay, now let me take you on a trip to the very bottom story, into the basement, into what people knew, I don't know how long ago before they put this mansion there, that in that side of that cliff, there are sacred objects buried. And there's a doorway. How do I know? Because it's been exposed. The Capitola Theater was destroyed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was knocked down just recently. In the past month, it was turned into a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that space was where the Magnolia Rose was. And if you go look at the wall against that cliff, there's a doorway made in red brick against that mountain, which means it can't lead to nowhere, right? Because it's a mountain. But it represents a doorway to stuff that was quite possibly put in there, I don't know, hundreds of years ago. That's the whole idea of the sainthood. You see, before Christ, we had many saints visit us. And these saints were persecuted and murdered very often. And that's what the Holy Scriptures say themselves, is that God got tired of sending saints, so he decided to manifest and send himself as his own self.
Oh.
So that when he was killed, because in anticipation, nobody wanted the truth. It's like, we love our stolen property. Leave us alone.
Yeah, we like our comfort.
Yeah. So, what was I trying to say?
We were talking about a doorway.
Oh, yeah. Go see the doorway.
Parking lot.
It's a sacred doorway. Uh-huh. It's right there. And pray. Pray for yourself what you need, but pray for the earth and the ocean need it more.
They certainly do. They need our healing and our intention.
So there was the mansion there for hundreds of years, and then when they land grabbed the Magnolia Rose and put it in pieces, they moved the Capitola Theater. It was an outdoor musical theater that was more, it wasn't there. They moved it forward and covered it with that cheap aluminum that they cover all their antique stores hold all their stolen property. And then they covered the doorway. And that doorway was never, ever, ever exposed. It was always a secret door. It was not even exposed when the mansion was there. It was underneath the shell staircase that connected the Magnolia Rose to a staircase to the mountain where the Bayview was. And that's one main reason in the haunting. There's a lot of activity on the back door of the Bayview because, again, the front door was never there.
Oh, and that's what the paranormal investigators discovered.
So the front door was never, never there. They popped the front door open.
So, of course,
the back
spirits
door,
would
closed.
Be going through the back door
and
thinking
knock
it
all
was
night
the front.
Long.
They knock,
all
as
night
you can
long.
Hear.
Yes.
You know, I before we end here, I highly suggest that you head on over to the Bayview Hotel, find out about these paranormal investigations. You may meet Julia there as well.
Yeah, and ask about it. There's some books there. You can actually buy the book there.
Great.
And, yeah.
Where else can you get the book? On Amazon?
Yeah, the book's on Amazon and on the Internet.
So we'd go to Amazon.com.
And then just Google The Haunting of Mission Santa Cruz.
And this is the third version, Volume 3, The Haunted Temple.
The Haunted Temple, wow.
Well, Julie, I'm going to have you back.
Thank you.
Soon. This was great.
Thank you.
And let's put a plug for a new home for the Free Radio Santa Cruz transmitter. We're still looking for a home. But in the meantime, you can listen to us on Radio for All under the series Tickling the Belly of the Beast, and you can get a listen to a recording of the program. And I want to say thank you for listening, and I'm going to try and get on one of my favorite songs. Let's see. We'll get Lakesh, hopefully. Our Warriors of the Way. Then we'll have Lakesh, and then hopefully Palestinian news, free speech news, and Informativo. Thank you for listening, and I'll be with you next week.
Adios, muchachos.
Thank you, Julia. Bye.